Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
No, they're lying to you again. It's not Alex Jones. Alex is off today. My name is Bob Dacey. I'm an associate of Mr. Jones. I write for Infowars.com every once in a while. I'm a native Austinite. I met Alex about, maybe 10 years ago, 11 years ago now. And it's kind of funny, the thing that woke me up about the New World Order and all that was one of the hot topic issues right now. Years ago, I was just sitting at home watching television, and I was bored, and I started to do the old channel surfing thing, and up pops this young punk named Alex Jones, and he's talking about the United Nations and the National Park System, and I thought he was a raving lunatic. However, he shifted gears and started talking about the true meaning of the Second Amendment. And so I was laughing at him, and then I said, okay, I got to hear what he says about this. This is going to be funny. So, in my business, which is a local hardware store here in town, I actually have a federal firearms license. I sell a few guns. And so he was going to talk about the meaning of the Second Amendment. So I was just laughing at the guy, saying, okay, let's see what this nutball says about the Second Amendment. So then he proceeded, I think he was 22, 23 years old, he proceeded to tick it off perfectly, everything about the Second Amendment, the facts, the history, the meaning, the context, original intent, perfectly, everything. So this got me in a quandary about why he could be such an idiot on the UN and completely right about the Second Amendment. So I checked into what he had to say, and sure enough, he was right about the other thing, too. So that's what kind of got me started in this field. I have years ago, I stumbled into hosting a TV show called The Simple Truth, and that show is in Austin on Channel 10. It's at 6 o'clock on Monday nights if you're in the Austin area on Time Warner Cable. If you're not in the Austin area, you can pick up the recordings of the show on a website that another volunteer put up. It's www.simpletruthonline.net. You got to remember it's .net because everybody tries .com. So it's www.simpletruthonline.net. You can see our shows that we do every week down at the local cable access studio in Austin, Texas. But anyway, we're talking about, what's going on since, what's been going on forever, this gun issue. And I know Alex has been talking about it quite a bit. And I want to talk about it a little bit, give you my take on it. I know that it's been a hot topic right now. I mean, you have a bill introduced recently to make FEMA camps all over the United States. That's great. And the thing I like about that bill is, the one-liner. They always put a it's always for the children, It's always the so-and-so and such bill in order to save the children and make everyone's life happy and help the environment, comma, and for other purposes. And that's the thing you got to worry about is the and for other purposes. And so I want to give you kind of a history of some of the things these nutballs have proposed in the past. One thing you can, I guess, positively say about Republicans is that most of them are not openly anti-gun. Most of your bubbas that are Republicans are pro-Second Amendment, pro-individual right to keep and bear arms. And your classic Democrat isn't, but he wishes he was, But back when... before the Republicans held sway in the House and Senate, you should see some of the stuff that these nutcases have introduced into legislation. They're trying to get bills passed in the United States Congress. And when we get back from the break, I'm going to take you to a trip down memory lane here from one of the most egregious things they ever tried to pull. This was a Senator Jack Reed, a Democrat from Rhode Island. So we'll be right back after the break. This is Bob Dacey for Alex Jones.
For
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Okay, once again, this is Bob Dacey substituting for Alex Jones today. And just so you'll know what we're planning on doing today before I get back into my gun thing, we're planning on having Max Kaiser on in the next hour. He's that economist forecaster dude. And then after that, Bob Chapman, who is the international forecaster, another economics guy. And from 2 to 3, we are supposed to have Kurt Nemo live in studio riding shotgun with yours truly. And then, actually, I think we're going to be playing a video in the last part of the show by a hip-hop artist by the name of KRS-One, something that they put together. So you want to stay tuned for that, and that way maybe I'll be able to survive this 4 hours, you know? Okay, now, let's get back to this gun thing. There's nothing new about the craziness of the legislation that these globalists and control freaks want to get done. I have an article written. This was back in 2000, March 16th, 2000. A fellow by the name of Stefan Archer writes this story. Senator proposes that the IRS register and tax your guns. If Senator Jack Reed, Democrat of Rhode Island, gets his way, the Internal Revenue Service will not only be the nation's tax collector, but its gun registrar. Reed's new bill, entitled The Handgun Safety and Registration Act of 2000, would, quote, amend the Internal Revenue Code of 1986 to require the registration of handguns, end quote. Handgun owners would also be forced to pay a $50 tax on all handguns they own. A $50 tax on the transfer of ownership of a handgun would also be implemented. Desmond Riley, spokesperson for the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence, you know, one of these gun-grabbing control freaks, says this: "This is a regulation, and I think Americans tend to embrace regulation. It means people's lives will be saved," end quote, Riley said. You know, I mean, this is not, I don't think this is the current thing, but this shows you the mindset of these nutballs. I mean, register. I mean, you're sitting there figuring this out. You know, you're out there and you're thinking, well, let's see. What entity of the federal government scares the bejesus out of everybody more than any other entity? I think the answer to that question is the Internal Revenue Service. That makes people quake. Well, wouldn't it be a good idea to have a law passed to require the American people to register their evil guns with the Internal Revenue Service? Maybe that would scare them into doing it, right? I mean, if your argument by this guy back then, Desmond Riley, is that, oh, it's just a regulation and Americans love to follow regulations, you know, if that's true, then I think they should probably pass regulations against the possession of knives and buckets and swimming pools and high school football. You know, why not? Why not? You know, if you're going to do that. Anyway, that bill, the reason I bring it up is because it illustrates the mindset of a bunch of nutballs. And that's what anti-gun people are, is nutballs. I have the bill itself here in front of me. And just looking at some of this, transfer tax imposed on handguns, tax on making firearms imposed on handguns, you know, make them so expensive nobody can afford them. Transition rule for non-registered handguns. You have to, you know, treatment of registration as a transfer. You see, can't you just see yourself, you know, sometime in the future when if the nutballs ever get something like this passed, you have your new 1040 form. And it says, 1040, section D7, new law requires you to pay a tax on all the guns you own. Here, write the make, model, serial number of every single gun you own on this form. Add up the number of guns you own, multiply it by 50, and send in the money, bub. I got a life-size picture of that. The Secretary of the Treasury shall make available such registration and fingerprint forms as may be required by the public for compliance for such requirements. Oh, my goodness. You know, again, these people are a bunch of nuts, and that's all there is to it. Okay, now let's see what else we got here. The other day, Alan Corwin, who is the author of the gun laws books, you know, I know I sell one of them in my store, the hardware store here in Austin, Texas. It's the Texas Gun Owner's Guide. Well, he publishes gun owner's guides for all the various states. And he's put out this letter to send to everybody you know. And let me just read from this. I have an outline of the Brady's current plans and targets of opportunity. It's horrific. They're going after the courts, regulatory agencies, firearms dealers, and statutes in an all-out effort to restrict we the people. They've made little mention of criminals. Now more than ever, attention to the entire Bill of Rights is critical. Gun bans will impact our freedoms under search and seizure, due process, confiscated property, states' rights, free speech, right to assemble, and more, in addition to the Second Amendment. The Democrats' current gun ban list proposal, the final list will be worse, is as follows. Now, I'm not going to go through every one of these things, these guns that they want to ban, now that they got the House, the Senate, and this globalist puppet, lackey Obama, as the president. Let's listen to some of these guns. The Ruger Mini 14. Oh, come on now. They want to ban the Ruger Mini 14? That's terrible. That's been around forever. You know, it's just like a combination between an M1 Garand and an M1A. I mean, you know, it's old, you know. What the heck? What do they want to ban that for? Because it's semi-automatic. Yeah, that's right. When you pull the trigger, a bullet comes out. And then if you pull the trigger again, another bullet comes out. That is just unacceptable. Then they want to, of course, ban the AR-15, which is a civilian version of the M16. They want to ban the Bushmaster XM-15, which is the same thing as an AR-15. Want to ban anything that says AK on it, Automat Kalashnikova, any of those ugly guns, which are actually, most of these ugly guns are like the AK, for example. The round that they shoot is less powerful than most hunting rifles. But the hunting rifles look more civilian looking, and the AKs look very, very vicious because commies like to carry them. So you can't have any AK type guns in the United States. AK-47, AK-74, you name it. Let's see what else they got here. And they have a catch-all category, the catch-all category. Any semi-automatic rifle with a fixed magazine that can accept more than 10 rounds. Ooh, now wait a minute. Let me think of one of those. A semi-automatic rifle with a fixed magazine. Well, I don't know. I don't think the Ruger 10/22 has a fixed magazine, but I think they're after that one too because it's semi-automatic. And also, all you people with your Remington 1100s, you know, that ancient old semi-automatic shotgun, that's not a good thing. That's not a good thing. Now, here's some more. Attorney General gets carte blanche to ban all guns at will. Let me repeat that. Attorney General, this guy that Obama's appointing, hates guns. You know, communists don't like guns in the hands of other people. They don't like it. So let me read this. Again, this is Alan Corwin's letter. Under the proposal, the U.S. Attorney General can add, quote, any semi-automatic rifle or shotgun originally designed for military or law enforcement use, or a firearm based on the design of such a firearm that is not particularly suitable for sporting purposes as determined by the Attorney General, end quote. Note that Obama's pick for this office, Eric Holder, confirmation hearing set for January the 15th, whatever, wrote a brief in the Heller case supporting position that you have no right to have a working firearm in your home. Okay, so get it straight, America, people who like the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, you know, freedom, liberty, all that stuff. The Attorney General wants to be able to ban whatever the heck he wants at his whim, and he hates guns. So do the math. And this part's funny. In making this determination, the bill says, quote, there shall be a rebuttable presumption that a firearm procured for use in the United States by the military or any federal law enforcement agency is not particularly suitable for sporting purposes. And a firearm shall not be determined to be particularly suitable for sporting purposes solely because the firearm is suitable for use in a sporting event. What? I think that was double speak and double talk. So in other words, if a rifle is used in a sporting event or a firearm, but the Attorney General determines that it's really not suitable for use in that sport, then he can ban it too. I give you an example about that. Years ago, I used to shoot a self-defense combat pistol sport called International Defensive Pistol Association, IDPA, and they used real-world handguns. For example, what the police use. The most common guns in these events were 1911s, the old 45s, various versions of them, and Glocks. And, of course, you know, most police in the United States carry Glocks. So according to this, there shall be a rebuttable presumption that a firearm procured for use by law enforcement is not particularly suitable for sporting. So what they'd be telling me is that gun that you shoot, your Glock that you shoot in your pistol competition, which is a sport, is not suitable for the sport that you shoot it in. Got it? I mean, we're talking crazy people here. And the bad news is that the crazy people are the ones that are in control of the government. Now, that hasn't changed any. The flavor of it's changed. They used to go after the Second Amendment under the table, and now they're heading at it full bore. So when we get back, we'll continue with this. This is Bob Dacey for Alex Jones on The Alex Jones Show, GCN Radio Network. Okay, this is Bob Dacey back, substituting for Alex Jones on this 30th day of January 2009, and I'm rolling on the gun control issue because it's a hot one right now. So let's continue on with our thoughts on that. A few quotes from some very famous people that were in the founding era. This is William Pitt. Necessity is the plea for every infringement of human freedom. It is the argument of tyrants. It is the creed of slaves, end quote. Yeah, you know, we just got to get rid of the guns because we have to, because they're there and you can't have them and they're dangerous and you need to trust the government, you know. I mean, so, you know, but no, that's not the real case. They always are saying that. Every time, they always got some great excuse for their stupid laws. And, of course, in the case of guns, it's because it's always to save the children, which is a crock. I wonder how many Jewish children died in World War II because their parents didn't have any guns. Oh, well, forget about that. That's ancient history. Here's another one. Patrick Henry. Ever heard of him? Guard with jealous attention the public liberty. Suspect everyone who approaches that jewel. Unfortunately, nothing will preserve it but downright force. Whenever you give up that force, you are inevitably ruined, end quote. That's Patrick Henry. He's a founding father. He's a hero of the American experience. You ought to listen to him because if they take your guns away from you, well, guess what? You will be a slave. And anybody that's out there listening that's in the military or law enforcement, you got to realize that's true. You know, you're supposed to protect and defend the Constitution, not whatever puppets up there in the White House right now who's violating the Constitution. Your job, your sacred duty, your sacred honor is to defend the Constitution of the United States of America, not the bozo giving you orders to do the exact opposite. I mean, that is serious. Your kids are going to have to live in this country, too, and your grandkids and everybody else. So all you police and military out there, you need to wake up. Read the Constitution. You know, it's what's funny. The current sheriff of Travis County, Greg Hamilton, when he was running for sheriff, I got a chance to ask him a question live on TV when he was a candidate. And just the basic deal was I asked him if, you know, if he was going to swear an oath to protect and defend the Constitution if he became Travis County Sheriff. And he said, oh, absolutely. And I said, well, are you going to, do you realize that the Bill of Rights is part of the Constitution? He said, oh, yeah, absolutely. And I said, well, do you agree that the Fourth Amendment, the one about the unreasonable search and seizure and having to get a warrant and going before a judge and doing your homework, you know, you got to say what's going to be seized and what's going to be searched and all that. Do you agree with that? Oh, yeah, Fourth Amendment, that's great. And then I asked him, well, if the feds come into town and they want your help to search my house without a warrant, are you going to help them? He said, sure, yeah. So here's the problem. All you cops out there listening, all you police out there, whatever, the problem is they're sitting there swearing an oath to protect and defend a document that they've never read and they don't understand. Now, there's the core problem. So the core solution there would be for all the police and the military to read the darn Constitution. Read it. You know, it was written in English for people who can understand English. You know, they tell you that it's so mysterious and so obscure that only 9 old geezers up on the Supreme Court can fully understand it. And that's a total crock, too. Maybe I'll get into that later. But anyway, let's go back to a couple of quotes here. Here's a good one right here. This is one of my favorite ones because it's Thomas Jefferson. You know, this tells you how you should try to interpret the Constitution. Right here. Quote, on every question of construction of the Constitution, let us carry ourselves back to the time when the Constitution was adopted, recollect the spirit manifested in the debates. Instead of trying what meaning may be squeezed out of the text or invented against it, conform to the probable one in which it was passed. End quote. Yeah, just read it. It says what it says. It means what it means. You know, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. If you go back and look at the history, the whole nine yards, well-regulated didn't mean run by the government, and militia didn't mean the National Guard. Well-regulated meant well-run, you know, organized. And militia, well, guess what that meant? That meant you. It means anybody capable of bearing arms. Continue with this after the break. This is Bob Dacey for Alex. I love ZZ Top. Good old Texas band.
I might be mistaken.
Yeah, I tell you who's mistaken. It's these anti-gun nuts. That's who's mistaken. I want to read another quote, and then we're going to get into some more of this gun stuff. And here's another quote. I like Patrick Henry a lot. You know, he was a fiery firebrand orator, and I think that, you know, I don't want to stroke Alex Jones's ego too much because he probably doesn't need that, but Alex Jones is a modern day Patrick Henry, and so Patrick Henry was, you know, he was the guy that whipped them all up, and that's what Alex does now. Here's another quote from Patrick Henry in regard to the Second Amendment or the right to keep and bear arms. Quote, are we at last brought to such humiliating and debasing degradation that we cannot be trusted with arms for our defense? End quote. Well, apparently not, Mr. Henry. Apparently, you know, we need to be giving them all up to our glorious, imperious, new imperious leader, Barack Obama, the second coming of Christ. And you know, he'll be able to beat our swords into plowshares, and then we can plow for him, you know? Yeah. Now, I want to read a quote from a letter that particular gun distributor sent to me. I'm not going to say who they are because it doesn't really matter. This is a quote from Barack Hussein, the usurper Obama, back when he was running for president. This was at a Violence Policy Center fundraiser in 2000. This is your current so-called titular puppet president of the United States. Quote, "My first priority will be to reinstate the assault weapons ban as soon as I take office. Within 90 days, we will go back after kitchen table dealers and work to end the gun show and internet sales loopholes. In the first year, I intend to work with Congress on a national no-carry law, one-gun-a-month purchase limits, and bans on all semi-automatic guns," end quote. And so then the author of this letter says, "Mr. Obama, will you really spend trillions on bailouts to create and protect jobs while destroying millions of American jobs in the firearms, hunting, gunsmithing, sporting, reloading, services, supplies, distribution, retail, and manufacturing business?" Apparently, yes. Wow. So, you know, talking about, here you go, he wants to get rid of this gun show loophole. You know, I remember years ago, in 2001, I'll tell you a little personal story here. In 2001, in March, here in Texas, they had this deal where they were going to pass a bill to end the gun show loophole. Now, what the gun show loophole is where you can buy or sell a gun at a gun show if you're not a dealer to another individual without them having to go through a background check. The bill basically proposed that what you could legally do in the parking lot outside the building, you couldn't legally do inside the building. It's preposterous. But anyway, this there was a big hearing down at the state capitol in here in Austin. I went down there, covered it for my TV show, The Simple Truth. And I was sitting in there watching this farce of a meeting. The main thing I remember is I was the very first person there to show up, literally the very first person, and you could sign up to speak. And so I signed up to speak, but there was a problem. You had to indicate whether you were for or against the bill. So I said, "Do I have to put that down?" "Yeah, you got to put that down." So I said I was against the gun show loophole bill. So what they did was, even though our side outnumbered the gun grabbers by about 20 to 1, I'd say, they put the gun grabbers on top of the stack and the pro-Second Amendment people on the bottom of the stack to make it look like everybody was for the bill. It was a farce. And the other thing I remember is you had two of these so-called gang members from Houston came up to quote-unquote testify. And I'm sitting there a few feet away from it, and they're sitting there just spewing lies to this committee, this House committee at the state capitol. One of the guys says, "Yeah, man, we go into gun shows, man. We bring cash. We go in there. We bring out sacks of guns at wholesale prices, no questions asked." You know, I'm listening to these lies, and I just can't believe it. And then shortly thereafter, Alex comes running into the room, taps me on the shoulder, and says, "Bob, get your camera out here right now. There's something going on in the hall." And so I got up, went out there, and the head of this anti-gun group in Houston, this old man by the name of Dave Smith, was paying off these guys that were lying to the committee with cash money right outside the committee room, literally. And somebody else caught some of it on videotape, and Alex went over there and talked to the guys. You know, and one of them said, this is a stipend for volunteering. I mean, these people, look, the anti-gunners they operate a lot like the communists do. Anything goes to get what you want. They lie, they cheat, they steal, they cheat, anything to get their way. They don't care. You know, the end justifies the means. So the main thing you have to learn when you're dealing with the anti-gunners is you can't compromise with them. You cannot compromise with them because they're just a bunch of liars. That same year, a really neat thing happened. You talk about the ability of just one or two people to make a big difference in an issue. The Million Mom March people were really crazy back then. They were having their little rallies all over the place, and they were, "Time to save the children, oh please, save the children. If it just saves one child, please, please." You know, these people, these shrill fools. Well, anyway, someone, I don't remember who it was, a man, I think it was a man and a woman, decided to find the Million Mom March headquarters back then. And so they noticed it was, they saw the address on the website, it was at some place in San Francisco. So they went to the address and they couldn't find it. Turns out the address was a hospital, a city-owned hospital. They were trying to find this place, and they noticed that the elevator wouldn't stop on one of the floors. So what did they do? They hitched a ride with a delivery man who knew how to stop the elevator at this particular floor. And lo and behold, there's the Million Mom March National Headquarters occupying, you know, maybe 5,000-6,000 square feet on a city-owned, government-owned building, a political advocacy group, rent-free. Well, guess what happened? When these people found the Million Mommy March headquarters, they had to evict them because they were violating the law by being there. You know, that's what I'm talking about. You know, these people, the anti-gunners, cannot be trusted. They cannot be compromised with. And, you know, they're all a bunch of totalitarian control freaks. You know, which brings me a little bit to this current thing, H.R. 45, to provide for the implementation of a system of licensing for purchasers of certain firearms and for a records of sale system for those firearms and for other purposes. Oh, you got to watch out when they say it's for other purposes, too. Look out. This is a summary I'm looking from the Thomas Government Document Locator. Blair Holt's Firearm Licensing and Record Act of 2009 amends the Brady Handgun Violence Prevention Act to prohibit a person from possessing a firearm unless that person has been issued a firearm license under this act or a state system certified under this act and such license has not been invalidated or revoked. We're talking about a federal record of sale system. This thing is horrible. Absolutely horrible. And it's kind of funny. You think that after the so-called Heller decision, which took place last year, where the Supreme Court finally came out and theoretically told you that there is an individual right to keep and bear arms, you would think that they'd get the message, but they don't. And, you know, when the Heller decision came about, I was kind of, I read the whole thing, and there's a lot of good stuff in there, and there's a lot of bad stuff in there. And, of course, the bad stuff always overrides the good. Back then, William Norman Grigg, who was formerly a senior editor of the New American Magazine, penned an article called The Heller Misdirection. In other words, the decision sounded good for the Second Amendment. It was advertised as good for the Second Amendment. The mainstream press begrudgingly said it was good for the Second Amendment. But if you looked at the fine print, well, wait just a minute. So I'm going to read some of this article by William Norman Grigg. Like the inhabitants of other formerly free societies, Americans are content to define freedom in terms of those liberties we are permitted to exercise. Yesterday's Supreme Court ruling in District of Columbia versus Heller is perfectly in harmony with this self-defeating concept of freedom. Scalia, who was the guy who wrote the main opinion, allows that the Second Amendment acknowledges and protects an individual right to armed self-defense. He then explicitly limits the extent to which that right can be exercised, thereby redefining it as a state-conferred privilege. We can't really expect a statist creature like Antonin Scalia to embrace the view that the right to keep and bear arms includes the right of citizens, acting either individually or collectively, to kill agents of the state when such action is necessarily and morally justified. In any other view of the Second Amendment is worse than any other view of the Second Amendment is worse than useless. This is certainly true of the view that emerges in Scalia's Heller opinion. He asserts, quote, like most rights, the Second Amendment right is not unlimited. It is not a right to keep and carry any weapon whatsoever in any manner whatsoever for whatever purpose. Miller's holding that the sorts of weapons protected are those in common use at the time and supports the historical tradition of prohibiting and carrying of dangerous and unusual weapons. Well, back to me now, Bob Dacey. We're talking about, okay, so the government's going to say, well, that weapon of yours is too dangerous, or that weapon of yours is very unusual, and you can't carry that one. And back to Mr. Grigg. When a government grants a liberty and then restricts the manner in which it can be used, the result is not a right, but a limited conditional license. Scalia's passage cited above will inevitably be seen as a license from the court for legislative bodies to enact or fortify laws against dangerous and unusual weapons, such as the scary-looking guns ritually denounced as assault weapons, for example, and other even more troubling portions of his opinion will abet further restrictions on the purposes for which firearms can be used. Wow, you think Mr. William Norman Gregg must know something about it, have a crystal ball or something here, because that's exactly what they're doing now. Here you have the Democrats in control of the House, the Democrats in control of the Senate, New World Order flunky in control of the White House, wasn't it ever thus, and, you know, they're openly now attacking the Second Amendment. Very shortly after the Heller decision supposedly said they need to leave it alone. William Norman Gregg, right again. Wow. How about that? Okay. Now, I want to go back in history. Another history lesson is very important. You know, you got to understand the history of what's been going on in order to understand what's going on now. I have an article in front of me by Aaron Zellman of Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, the GCA 68, that stands for Gun Control Act of 68, What Your Politician Never Told You. Why would a U.S. senator in 1968 be vitally interested in the structure and contents of a Nazi law of 1938? We cannot ask the late Senator Thomas J. Dodd personally, but we can look at the facts. Thomas Dodd served as a senior member of the team of U.S. prosecutors at the Nuremberg trials of the Nazi war criminals in 1945 to 46. In that position, Dodd had access and doubtless reviewed Nazi laws. Something about the Nazi laws must have intrigued Dodd. As a senator from Connecticut, Dodd chaired the committee hearings on bills, quote, to require the registration of firearms, end quote, and to build the National Firearms Owner Database. Many of the Nazi Germany's social and engineering schemes, including its civilian disarming and murdering programs, rested on a national citizen registration and tracking. Is this what Senator Dodd had learned from the Nazis? As it happened, Senator Dodd owned personally a copy of the Nazi Weapons Law of 1938. Before the Gun Control Act of 1968 was enacted, Senator Dodd asked the Library of Congress to translate Dodd's own copy of that law. Do you understand this? Look, Senator Dodd sent the Nazi Gun Control Act of 1938 to the Library of Congress and asked them to translate it into English. This is the basis of our law. It's not radical to think that they would have done that. It only makes sense if you think about it. You're sitting there trying to enact a gun control law, and you think, well, gee, who really knew how to do it? Oh, Adolf, Uncle Adolf knew how to do it. So let's see, translate this thing into English, and we'll use that as the basis for the Gun Control Act of 68, and that's exactly what they did. So, you know, all you people out there that have some bizarre notion that if you just take the guns away from all of the innocent people and all the peaceful citizens, that all of a sudden everything's going to be rosy and the government's going to have the guns and everything's going to be wonderful. You people need to, like, you know, get a life or something, or maybe check a book out on reality, because that's not the reality. The reality is that, you know, it's the golden rule. You know, He who has the guns makes the rules. And when the people of the United States have the guns, we're in charge. When the government, in whatever flavor or entity you want to say, when they've got the guns and we don't, we are slobbering slaves. You know, I don't understand how some people can't see this. I know they get in their little box and they see some accident with a gun and they say, well, you know, if it just saves one child, if it just saves one child, we need to get rid of all of them. And again, I'm sorry, that's not the big picture. The big picture is when they get rid of your guns, they get rid of you. All right, we'll be back in a few minutes. We're going to catch up on more of this stuff. This is Bob Dacey for Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. Back in a few. Okay, this is Bob Dacey back for Alex Jones on the Alex Jones Show, GCN Radio Network. Substituting today for about the 13th or 14th time. I really enjoy doing this. I don't get to talk to 2 million people every day. Okay, before I get back with the gun thing, I want to plug something. You know, one of the products that Alex advertises on this show is the Ecolo Blue Model 28, which is a water making device. It takes water out of the air, filters it, and then, hey, guess what? You drink it. I just want you to let you know I have one of those things, and I think the thing is really neat. I'm not going to plug it the way he plugs it. I'll plug it the way I plug it. The thing, what it is a little water treatment plant that you have in your own house. And, you know, it's very smart. It sits there and it makes water. It transfers it from one thing to another. It stirs the water sometimes. It recycles it. It heats it if you want it. It cools it down if you want it. Tells you what it's doing. It shuts off when it doesn't need to make any more. And the higher the humidity is in the area, the more water it makes. And so, go to ecoloblue.com and check out their website. I think that thing just the neatest thing since sliced toast. And I'm the first on my block to have one. So there, how about that? Also, while we're talking about, you know, oh, by the way, the reason I like the thing is because when I know the water that comes out of it doesn't have any chlorine in it, it doesn't have any crud in it, and it doesn't have any fluoride in it. There you go. That's why. That's why I've got one. You know, so you control your own water supply. You maintain that thing, and it'll maintain you. That's it. Okay, also, other thing you need other than water is food, and I want to talk about eFoodsDirect.com. They're one of the advertisers on this show, one of the supporters of this show. By supporting them, you support the Alex Jones Show. And, you know, it's not a bad idea to have some food. You know, look what happened at Katrina and all that. You know, you don't want to be standing around waiting for FEMA to give you something. You don't want that, I'll guarantee you. You know, if things get bad or whatever, I view the whole thing as an insurance policy. You know, if you don't, you can buy it, you can store it, you can eat it, fine, whatever. If you don't want to, you don't have to, but if you need it, you know, why not? Why not? So go to eFoodsDirect.com and check out what they have to offer. It makes a lot of sense to me. Okay, I'm not used to doing commercial plugs because my TV show, The Simple Truth, here in Austin, is all non-commercial, and you can't do that on cable access TV. But, hey, this is the big time, so there you go. Okay, now, I was talking about the fact that the Gun Control Act of 68 was derived from the Nazi gun laws of 1938. I'm going to read to you the letter, the cover letter from the Library of Congress that was sent to Thomas Dodd when they returned his Nazi Gun Control Act to him, translated into English. Library of Congress, Washington, D.C., July 12, 1968. Honorable Thomas J. Dodd, Chairman, Special Subcommittee to Investigate Juvenile Delinquency, U.S. Senate, Washington, D.C. Dear Senator Dodd, your request of July 2, 1968, addressed to the Legislative Reference Service for the translation of several German gun laws has been referred to the Law Library for attention. In compliance with your request, and with reference to several telephone conversations between Ms. Frank of your office and Mr. Fred Karp, European Law Division, we are enclosing herewith a translation of the Law on Weapons of March 18, 1938, prepared by Dr. William Soyem Fekete of that division, as well as a Xerox copy of the original German text which you supplied. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Figure it out.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
No, live from Austin, Texas, this is Bob Vasey substituting for Alex Jones here on the 30th day of January 2009. For the last hour, I have been harping on the Second Amendment and the assault that's been going on the Second Amendment, and I guess it's just going to continue to go on. The thing to do, this is it right here. This is what you need to do. Number one, any law that is repugnant to the Constitution is null and void. Therefore, any of these gun control things that tell you to turn in your guns or whatever they're going to concoct, well, just ignore them because, you know, when you turn in your guns, you've had it. That's it. It's over. So don't turn in your guns. You know, even if half the American people are going to be classified as criminals, well, the government that attacks the Second Amendment by definition is criminal. So if you're a criminal to a criminal, that's two bad things. That means that's a good thing. Two negatives makes a positive. Therefore, you're not a criminal. Also, the other thing that's extremely important, and I mean this is so important, military and police out there, Jack McClam always says that when tyranny comes, it comes wearing a uniform. It's up to you guys to do nothing. You know, read the Constitution, read the oath that you swore to protect and defend it, read the Second Amendment, and just refuse. Just sit on your hands. Do nothing. You know, if some bozo up in some ivory tower tells you to go out and collect firearms in the neighborhood, like a trick-or-treater, just don't do it. Or fake like you're doing it and come back empty. I don't care what. Just don't do it. You know, you'll be helping to save your country. And, you know, isn't that the point? Isn't that the point? So anyway, that's what you need to do. Massive, massive Gandhi-esque civil disobedience. That's the key. And again, both officials, police, military, and regular Joes, regular Bubbas, regular whatever, just don't cooperate. Just don't cooperate with them, you know? I mean, I cannot imagine an American who would get an IRS form and start filling out the serial number of his guns. And they're, here, I got this many guns. I mean, I got me a Ruger Mini 14. Oh, well, that's illegal. I better not put that one down there. Oh, I got an 8. No, can't put down there. Well, I got a Ruger 10/20. No, I can't put that down there. Well, let's see. I got a revolver. Oh, wait, I got a flintlock. I'll put that one down there. Flintlock. Yeah, if Barack Hussein Obama the usurper has his way, they're going to rewrite the Second Amendment. They're going to say the right of the people to keep and bear flintlocks shall not be infringed. That's what they're going to do. That's going to be the operative thing. They're going to strictly interpret, and they're going to say, look, the only thing they had back then was flintlocks. And therefore, the Founding Fathers meant that if there was any technological advantage that was included, you know, like if guns get better, well, your guns can't get better. You know, so problem is the Supreme Court decision, U.S. versus Miller, kind of makes that kind of hard to do because Miller decision said that the constitutionally protected guns are the ones that are of the type that the military uses and of the type in common use at the time. And there's another little inconvenient fact that comes up, and that is that back during the time of the Revolutionary War, the civilians actually had better guns than the military. The military had those Brown Best muskets, smooth bore, and the civilians, a lot of them had rifles. So that screws up that argument, too. When we get back, we have Max Kaiser coming up, and we're going to talk financial stuff with him. I'm going to try to do my best. I'm a small businessman. I hope I can talk with this guy. Back after the break. Bob Dacey for Alex Jones.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Okay, once again, this is Bob Dacey, substitute for Alex Jones. And I want to read a little headline here from the local paper. Got out of the paper the other day. Recovery plan now at $825 billion. And then later on, they had another article in the local paper that said, oh, they passed an $819 billion bailout. And looks like this particular bailout is more flavored to giving stuff away to not the bankers. You know, some of it. It's like they're going to give away school district stuff, modernization, infrastructure, bribes to the individual people, tuition tax credits and stuff. This is getting a little over my head. So what we're going to do, we're going to bring on Max Kaiser, who is one of these financial guru guys. And Max, are you there?
Hey, Bob, how's it going?
I don't know, man. I'm kind of vaguely familiar with some of this stuff. I am I'm a small businessman, and you know, in small business, you don't get squat from nobody. So I want to ask you a bunch of questions, I guess. Or first off, tell the people who you are again, and kind of familiarize them with what you do, please.
Well, first of all, Bob, I feel through the luck of the draw, I get to be on the show with you today. That Alex Jones character, that guy is crazy. Thank goodness. That guy Alex is crazy. I'm on with Bob Dacey. Thank God.
Well, how do you know I'm not crazy?
I've been listening to the show. I've listened to all 14 times you were on before, Bob.
Oh, really? Well, gosh, I have a fan. That makes two. That's good. That's funny. I'm classified kind of jokingly. I'm a crazy right-wing extremist wacko conspiracy theorist. And the problem is I'm not crazy. Right and left wingers, a bunch of nonsense. Extremist, well, you know, if you believe in the Constitution, you're an extremist. Wacko, I don't really think so. I think I'm pretty logical, pretty cool-headed. And conspiracy, yeah, there's definitely a conspiracy out there. But theorist, no, it's not a theory, it's a fact. But I appreciate the compliment there. But once again, tell people about what you do, because, you know, that's what you're supposed to do when you introduce a guest.
Sure. First of all, my main site is maxkaiser.com. That's K-E-I-S-E-R, maxkaiser.com. And myself and Stacy, we track the financial collapse and all the financial shenanigans on that site. And before that, we were making films for Al Jazeera English on markets and finance, covering all that's been going on in the last few years. We predicted, for example, we were in Iceland a year before the economy collapsed. We made a film about that collapse, spoke to the bankers up there, said your economy is going to collapse. A year later, it collapsed. We talked about the real estate collapse, the U.S., the U.K. pound collapsing, banks in the U.K. collapsing. We talked about all that stuff. We talked about a new Great Depression coming based on the SEC's failure and the reemergence of rigged markets that we saw back in the late 20s and 30s. Before that, I was in Los Angeles. I created something called the Hollywood Stock Exchange. I basically created the idea of trading box office futures contracts, which now there's a company called Cantor Exchange, which is part of Cantor Fitzgerald. They bought the Hollywood Stock Exchange. They're now launching box office futures contracts. So I kind of invented that whole concept. Before that, I was a stockbroker on Wall Street. And I guess what I'm kind of specializing in these days is looking at the technology that runs markets, picking up on when markets are manipulated, when markets you can make predictions on which way prices are going if you kind of understand how markets are being manipulated. And I just did an interview with Joseph Stiglitz on his way to Davos a couple of days ago. He was talking about the fact that all markets are, in fact, manipulated. And ever since markets got off, in the U.S., in 1971, the U.S. tied the last tie that they had with the gold standard, and we went on to a purely fiat currency system, meaning that none of the currencies had any intrinsic value. They weren't convertible into something like gold. The currency was then just a piece of paper that was backed by the full faith and credit of the government. Since 1971, the global economy and the U.S. economy has been based on these fiat currencies, which are basically, to put it in economic terms, fungible. In other words, you can play a lot of games with fiat currencies. And we've seen since that time the savings and loan crisis, the 1987 stock market crash, long-term capital management explosion, the dot-com bust, and then more recently the real estate bust, and now the Wall Street banking bust.
Well, that brings up a question. I'm trying to think of an intelligent question to ask you because you're in a field that's like way beyond my meager small businessman abilities. But you know, I'm listening to what you say, and I'm thinking, yep. Well, if the markets are rigged, if they're controlled, if they're manipulated all the time, how does the little guy make an honest buck trying to invest when he's playing against a stacked deck that he's got no control over?
Well, you have to know, you sit down at a poker table, you have to know who you're playing with, and the old saying is, if you don't know who the chump is, you're the chump. So there's ways to invest, there's ways to make money, but I think you need to go in there with your head held high, and you have to go in there understanding that the markets are inherently flawed and that they're grossly rigged. And they've gotten to a level just before, let's say, 18 months ago when this current crisis started, to extremes, historical streams of market rigging. And just to give you an idea, I mean, so the two questions you're asking, you're saying, well, how does a small businessman make money or survive in this type of market? I think that currently you have to be defensive, put the defense on the field, take the offense off, put the defense on. And the way you put the defense on the field is by getting liquid, paying down all your debts, no credit card debts, and starting to accumulate some precious metals. And there's different ways to accumulate precious metals. You can own the gold bullion outright. I know there's links to different things on maxkaiser.com. We try to link to different ways you can, own gold bullion, silver bullion, which is a purely defensive measure. It might not make you necessarily rich, but at least your purchasing power for your gold and silver during the period that we're in now is maintained. So that's, as I said, that's the idea: is to play defense. Don't try to over finesse it. This is even the smartest guys on Wall Street, Bob, as we've seen, some of the smartest people, so called, on Wall Street, have gotten absolutely hammered in the last couple of years because the game has gotten so rigged and so outrageous that even experienced people in the markets are getting completely blown up. So that's my first comment. In terms of
gold investing, the markets are so screwed up, and they're so controlled, and there's so many financial shenanigans going on. Do you trust paper gold?
Well, that's a good question. That's a really good question.
Yeah, you call up your broker and say, well, buy me some of this, and you've got an entry on a piece of paper that says you bought it. I mean, do you trust that?
It's a really good question, Bob. And when I was on Alex's show back in November, okay, just to full disclosure here, I mentioned that the paper market in December on the COMEX, that there was looking like there could be a run on the COMEX, and we would see a market failure, based on what I, at that time, thought was going to be physical demand from the big, big players, particularly in Canada, and didn't materialize. The price of gold has gone up, mind you, so nobody, if they had followed that idea and bought gold, they would be making a very handsome rate of return. So I don't feel as though it was the wrong thing to say in terms of maintaining a good portfolio. But in fact, it wasn't.
Was your timing just off?
Well,
in other words, could it still happen?
The COMEX is a market that, like also the NYMEX, which is the sister market, a paper market in New York where they trade oil futures. These markets, like all markets, are really captured by, they're captured markets by the biggest banks and the regulators who are in bed with these guys, because it's a way for policy, economic policy is being conducted by establishing prices that will, in effect, make the policies happen. So it's a complete reversal of what you'd expect, where somebody would make a policy and then you'd see how the prices react. Instead, what we're seeing is that the people who make policies first pick a price that they want to see, they manipulate the markets to that price, and then they know that the policies will and the effects will happen hitherto.
I want to get your take on something else that you, at one time, along with most other people, predicted back in the middle of last year.
But before you get to that, Bob, quickly, yeah. If you're saying physical gold over paper gold,
yeah.
Physical gold is obviously preferable. There are sites where you can buy physical gold, and they'll store it for you in London or Zurich and in a vault. And there's two sites in particular. One is called goldmoney.com. Who I know the guy, James Turk, very well. Again, full disclosure, I know James Turk, and I on occasion do business with them, but I can vouch for their service. And it's the physical gold, they hold the gold for you. You're getting the gold at the paper price, which is at a discount to the physical price, so you're actually kind of playing with the big boys, so to speak. And again, maxkaiser.com, you would find links to this type of stuff. But anyway, so yes, the paper gold market is obviously to be avoided. But go ahead.
Yeah, another thing I was kind of doing a little bit of research on you last night because I didn't want to be a complete idiot while I'm talking to you. You know, I had to do a little bit of homework. I noticed that back, I guess it was in the middle of last year, you had been talking about the direction of the price of oil. And when we get back from the break, I want to ask my question having to do with the manipulation of the oil market. So once again, when we get back from the break, this is Bob Dacey substituting for Alex Jones on The Alex Jones Show, GCN Radio Network. Back in a few. Bob Dacey, back on the Alex Jones Show, talking with Max Kaiser about things financial. And before the break, I was getting ready to ask him a question about the price of oil. And here's the question. Back then, most people back in, say, July or whatever of last year were saying, okay, oil's about $140 a barrel, and it's probably going to go to $175 or even $200. And then something happened. Interesting to note that Lindsey Williams made an announcement that he had been talking to his elitist buddies in the oil business, and they said they were fixing to manipulate the price of oil down to around $50 within the year, and it just didn't make any sense that that would happen, and yet that's exactly what happened. Do you, Mr. Kaiser, agree that just a complete gross manipulation of the price was brought about by the financial elites to make that happen?
Well, I'm familiar with Lindsey Williams' call, and he made a good call, but I kind of disagree with some of his work, because Mr. Williams is not a believer at all in this theory of peak oil or this idea of peak oil. And I've done a lot of work on peak oil, and I'm in the camp that supports the idea of peak oil. But certainly, over the past 6 months, Lindsey Williams' call has been prescient and looks good. Now, going for, let's talk about oil price manipulation for a second, because here we do have common ground. As I said before, you've got the NYMEX, which is the sister futures trading floor to the COMEX in New York. It's probably the biggest exchange where oil is traded. There's a huge incentive, and you've got to kind of look at, you know, that old song, the hip bone's connected to the leg bone, the leg bone's connected to the foot bone. Remember that old song, Bob?
Yeah, I remember that one.
Okay. Well, the oil market is connected to the dollar market, and the dollar market's connected to the gold market. And if you understand that, the one thing that the banking elite does not want, it's a higher gold price, then they fight like the Dickens to keep the gold price as cheap as it possibly can, and they do that by employing such things as naked short selling on these various exchanges, which means selling stuff that doesn't even exist. So it's even beyond the normal short selling, which is just selling stuff that you hope to buy back later. They're selling stuff that doesn't even exist. That's called naked short selling.
Are you saying they dropped the gold price in order to, to drop the oil price in order to suppress the gold price, and it didn't work?
I'm saying you dropped the gold price basically to give support to the dollar. And as you get support to the dollar, there was this huge outflow out of the trade, the anti-dollar trade. There was this huge anti-dollar trade at that time, which included going long commodities like oil and gold. The dollar was trading at historic lows. Gold was flirting at around 1,000. Oil, as you pointed out, was in the 140, 147. And so this was giving a tremendous fright to especially the banking community, because people are starting to talk about maybe getting rid of the dollar as the world reserve currency. And having the dollar as a world reserve currency gives the U.S. banks the privilege of printing dollars for the world. And for every dollar they print, they get a commission, effectively. It's called seniorage. So they get a commission. You know, the world runs on dollars at the moment. And the U.S. prints dollars, they get like a commission. They get a commission to print all these dollars. If gold and commodities are running higher, then countries start to think, well, maybe we should do something other than the dollar. Right before shock and awe, right before the U.S. invaded Iraq, Saddam Hussein was saying, you know, we're going to start trading our oil in euros. Within 6 months, you had shock and awe. In Iran, you've got the leaders in Iran saying, maybe we should trade our oil in euros. You've got huge tension in the previous administration with Iran. So the dollar franchise, which has been in place since the end of World War II, is an incredibly lucrative franchise for U.S. banks. So when gold and oil and these commodities started to challenge that, they come in a very coordinated way. The banks are working very closely with people in the Treasury and the Federal Reserve to do what they have to do to drive the price of these commodities down, including oil and gold. And this gives support to the dollar. We've had this dollar rally since that time, which has been not as robust recently as it was maybe a few months ago. But the answer to your question is the price of oil manipulated? Yes. Is it because peak oil is a myth? No, I don't agree with that. But I do agree with Lindsay, that Mr. Williams, that you do have manipulation in the futures market. If that's
okay, Max Kaiser, hold that thought. We'll be back after the break.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying.
Isn't that the truth? You know, Alex has the coolest music. I don't know. It's amazing. He gets all the good music. You know, if I was to ever do a show, I'd probably have to find me some new music or something that's not his, because he gets all the good stuff, you know. Matter of fact, he reaches into era music from my era. You know, he plays Heart, you know, ZZ Top, you know, what else? Led Zeppelin. I mean, he gets all the good stuff. You know, he ought to stay in his own genre up with younger people, you know, but he's... Anyway, we're back on the Alex Jones Show. This is Bob Dacey. I'm talking with Max Kaiser about things financial, and I'm probably in over my head on this.
But we were talking about manipulation of the oil market and the gold market and all that. I just wonder, you know, this driving down of the price, Mr. Kaiser, was so radical. I mean, in order to accomplish what they wanted, do they really have to plunge a stake in the heart of the price of oil? Why did it drop so far?
Well, think about the benefit. It completely has nearly bankrupted Russia. And remember, Russia was very active in the region. America had a relationship with the Ukraine. And then Russia started to get very militaristic. And that also is a benefit. If you drive price of oil down, the Russian economy is now basically on its back foot.
Yeah, but didn't they get
obviously in the Mideast.
Didn't they get militaristic? Are you talking about the Georgia thing?
Well, yeah, the pipeline, there's an oil pipeline in the region, and it goes through the Ukraine, and Russia wants total control, and their coffers are being filled as the price of oil is going higher, was Venezuela, as was the Mideast.
Yeah, but the thing with the Georgia thing was the Georgian army was trained by the Americans and the Israelis, and you know, they provoked them. I mean, from the worldview, the Russian response was predictable. You know, okay, fine, you're going to cross into some stuff and beat up on a bunch of Russians and kill a bunch of civilians. We're going to come cross the border and kick your hind end. I mean, that seemed like they were manipulated into being materialistic, don't you think?
Well, I think the European view, you know, I'm calling you from Paris, and the European view is slightly different, that in fact the antagonism went the other way initially. But the bottom line is that there's a huge incentive to drop the price of oil to defang those ambitions, because now Russia's on its back foot trying to deal with a collapse in energy prices. Obviously, in Venezuela is now pulling back from its initiatives to flood cheap oil into the U.S. Remember, they're trying to get some goodwill doing some oil exportation that way into New York. The Mideast, they're now obviously having to suffer along with this collapse in the price of oil. So,
well, according to Lindsay Williams, that was one of the principal reasons to collapse the price of oil. The elites were going to do it to punish the Arab world, because that's the only thing they got to sell, you know.
Well, I mean that's a benefit for sure. I mean that's certainly. I think that during the Bush administration, you know, you had this incredible run up in the price of oil, and the oil companies made huge profits. But at the same time, you can't do that without empowering Mideast, Venezuela, Russia. And it came to a point where they're like, look, we can't keep running the price of oil on the upside, because remember, it was manipulate on the upside as well. We can't keep doing that. And although Exxon and Chevron, these companies are making huge profits, at some point, you know, there's a cost benefit analysis that needs to be done. We're giving too much money to these guys in these other regions, so we got to throttle things back. So I'm sure a conversation was had with the major oil companies in the U.S. who said, okay, you know, thank you very much for our multi-billion-dollar quarters of highest recorded profits in the history of commerce and the history of the world. We'll take our money, and okay, new administration, we'll go from there. So the prices should be floating based on supply and demand, but they're not. You know, they're not. The prices are not based on supply and demand in the oil market, although that should change as you start to run into what's called supply collapse, which I'm not in agreement with Mr. Lindsay on. And you don't see price discovery in a fair way either in the financial markets, because interest rates in the U.S., it's not determined by the market. It's not determined by supply and demand. It's determined by the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee. And
well,
they get together.
There's a question that brings up to me, and I'm going to sit here and openly disagree with you on this peak oil thing, because it'll be fun, you know?
Okay, let's get into the peak oil thing. Here we go, Bob. Getting into the peak oil.
Okay,
all righty.
Here we go. Let me just throw out a few plebeian opinions on this issue. You know, I know Lindsay Williams, and I trust the guy. And, you know, I read his book, The Energy Non-Crisis, which he wrote many years ago. And, you know, the bottom line, what he's saying in the Energy Non-Crisis is that he was physically up there at Gull Island in Alaska when Atlantic Richfield proved this monstrous find up there. It was, they said that, they, you know, due to whatever techniques they use, they're proving their well capping, pressure testing, or whatever, I'm not into that, that they had decided that what's underneath them is so huge that it's probably as big as anything in Saudi Arabia. And they were all having a good old time celebrating up there. And then the federal government came in and told them a few days later, cap those wells, pull up this stuff, and get the heck out of here and shut your mouth. And basically this book is about the fact that it kind of agrees with what you're saying, that everything's manipulated. You know, and I wonder in the peak oil thing, if these people manipulate the price, they manipulate everything, and there's no free market out there anymore. It's all just playing games. Isn't it the same people that are providing you with the information that peak oil is real? Isn't it the same people that are feeding you what you believe?
Well, I made a film on this. I traveled to the Mideast and talked to people. And the fact is that the biggest fields in the world, whether it's in Mexico or Saudi Arabia, are in decline. They are putting out less oil, less and less every year. The global output of oil year on year for the year we just reported is dropped something like 7 to 9%.
Yeah,
and
but this, isn't that because they want it?
Supply destruction.
Don't they manipulate that too? You know, can't they make
well,
the global
I think
supply
in the case
of
in the case of financial markets, the case for manipulation is one that is easier to make because you've got this fiat currency world. You've got notational values being exchanged between banks where they just create they say, here's a credit default swap, and it's priced at X, Y, and Z, and it's just pulled out of a hat, really. In the case of oil, because it is a physical commodity, you can look at actual physical evidence and the geological evidence, and you can actually make a fairly strong empirical case that looking at what's going on in these fields, the amount of oil coming out at the end of the day is dropping. The amount of water being pushed in there to push the oil out, there's been no major discoveries, really.
That's the rub right there. I mean, you're talking about plunging your soda straw into some soda, and all of a sudden you're hearing that noise, you know, instead of getting good Coca-Cola out of there. I'm talking about other Coca-Colas. I'm talking about if it is true that there are discoveries which they have suppressed and are refusing to allow us to gut after, then you're going to create an artificial peak oil shortage, aren't you? And that way you can keep the price up and you can tell the people that they need to drive electric cars and stop driving their muscle cars and all that other stuff. It seems like you can create the illusion of peak oil if you suppress oil finds and won't let people develop them.
You could. And ultimately, you know, this we're going to find out because at the rate of the depletion of oil is now hitting really a very steep downward curve. And the peak oil theory and the peak oil camp, of which I'm involved with, we'll know in the next 12 to 18 to 24 months definitively whether or not our camp is really in the right camp. But, I mean, what you're saying is true.
You're saying there's
an incentive to manipulate the way that you're suggesting, for sure. There's an incentive to do that, as there's an incentive to manipulate any market at any time by profiteers looking to manipulate intelligence, looking to manipulate prices, looking to manipulate data, politics, propaganda. This is a scourge of modern society, is propaganda and manipulation. And since in the modern era, it's become quite a problem, because as the manipulators gain political influence, they've been able to buy their way into the major media outlets of the world and squeeze out or push out any alternative voices. Now, in the case of, let's say, Alex Jones and Bob Dacey on the Alex Jones Show, you know, you guys are putting out information that, in my opinion, is extremely valuable, even though, just like you're categorized unfairly as extreme right, Max Kaiser is unfairly characterized as extreme left. You know, that's my handle. People characterize me as being part of the extreme left, and yet that's absurd. Just like I believe that Alex Jones is not part of any extreme right. Alex Jones is just a guy who's trying, and Bob Dacey, who's interested in uncovering information that's not being covered by this captured mainstream media that seems to be captured by the regulators, by the corporations, what I call the corporate occupation. And the information's not getting out there.
Well, what I'm saying, Max, is this. Look, I would if I could have my way, you know, if I was like President Bob Obama, you know, and I was really, really born in the United States and everything, and I could actually just wave my magic wand, and there's no manipulation and there's no corruption going on, I'd be sending my guys up to Gull Island and finding out whether Lindsey Williams is right. You know, is there an oil field? Is there an oil area up there on the northern Alaska border, which is so vast and so huge as to make the peak oil thing a crock? You know, and is that a representative sample of other things going on, manipulated around the world, where they're hiding this stuff from us to keep the price up and to con us out of our standard of living because of this peak oil boogeyman that they keep throwing at us? See, I'd like to be able to prove that. You know, I'd like to be able to go up to Gull Island and say, okay, is that sucker really there? You know, and are there other suckers all over the place that are there that they just won't let us touch? I mean, Lindsey Williams said they went up there, the federal government went up there and said, get the heck out of here. And I know that even just as a layman, you go look at a geological map of Alaska and you find out that 80% of the whole thing up there is off limits. You know, if they're making things off limits, how can you have peak oil if you have a stacked deck like that? I don't agree with you.
Okay, now you're talking about Lindsey Williams, and first of all, the fact that the price collapsed the way it did, you have to, you know, tip my hat to Lindsey Williams, because when the price was at 147, as you point out, a lot of pundits were saying, hey, it's going to 175, 220. Lindsey Williams was like a lone voice out there saying, no, it's going to drop down to 50. And, you know, he's right. And that was a great call. But I disagree kind of in, you know, looking at what he looks at in his research. You talk about Lindsey Williams. You believe in his stuff. I look at a guy like Matt Simmons, who is got 30 years, you know, poking straws in the ground, who's a scientist, a geologist, who's got no reason to, no agenda to go out there and smudge or fudge the figures. And that's the guy who I look at. Now, ultimately, we live still in a somewhat capitalist environment. There's a question as to how much longer we will be in a capitalist environment. But we do live in an environment where the price will out. You know, we'll see, you know, in the next couple of years whether or not this depletion or supply destruction is really going to cut into the global supply of oil out there, as I think will be the case. The demand keeps going up. The demand in the last year was higher than it was the year before by a million barrels a day. Even in this economic duress, you still had demand increasing from places like China, India, et cetera. Supply is decreasing, and we put those two things together, it translates into a higher price. I agree with Lindsey that the price of the futures and the paper market is manipulated, as all markets are manipulated. And I think he looks great in the last 6 months. I think 6 months from now, it's going to be a different story, but I have to concede to you the point that in the last 6 months, you know, he's definitely got the winning hand in the last 6 months. You know, if you had bought oil at 140, you'd be, you know, crushed in your account today. And that's a tragedy for those people who bought oil at that price. And he's looking good. But I have not seen where I've weighed all the inputs and the outputs. To me, I'm a believer in the peak oil, but I'm not a fanatic. I mean, I'm always looking for new information. I'll reread Lindsey Williams' stuff again. I'll look at it again. Maybe I'm overlooking something. I'm perfectly willing to do that. I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
When I look at this, I see a blizzard of BS, you know, out there, and everyone seems to have a reason for spread or putting out information or disinformation, and when you don't have a clean playing field and you don't have independent confirmation where people aren't playing with stuff, I don't see how you can come up with any conclusions. My conclusion is, you know, I'm with Alex in that the global elites, the New World Order crowd, if you want to call them, whatever you want to call them, the international bankers or whatever, They're out to screw the rest of us and make a bunch of bucks and convince us that it's for our own good. And, of course, you know, convincing us that we can't drive our truck anymore, or if that's good for them, great. You know, they're gonna lie to us. That's all they ever do is lie to us. So in this atmosphere, this forest of lies, which is, you know, A, the mainstream media, and B, the global elite, I don't see how anybody can come up with any real honest facts. That's all. It's just kind of a... It's confusing, I guess, and I think it's meant to be.
Well, I saw in an interview,
I believe you said that they are urinating on us. Didn't you say that?
Who did I say was urinating on who? That sounds interesting. What did I say?
I think I saw that on the video clips that. You know, that they were, you know, basically peeing on us. You know, it's like, I think that was you. I hope, if I'm wrong, I'll take that back. But I think
okay,
that was you.
I think I'm familiar with the clip, and it refers to my main group that I am deeply disappointed with are the bankers in America, the people on Wall Street, the regulators like the SEC. The Treasury, the Federal Reserve Bank, those people, and under Bush, his whole coterie of advisors, all those people have done a horrible job and have committed transgressions, if you will, to the point of you could classify them, if you want to look historically, over the course of American history, they would be classified as tyrants in a lot of ways. Because
okay, I'll tell you what. Hold that thought. Max will be back after the break, and we'll pick up on who the crooks are. This is Bob Dacey for Alex Jones. Be back in a few. Okay, Bob Dacey back on the Alex Jones Show with our guest, Max Kaiser. Okay, we've got one more segment, Max. We're talking about somebody trying to urinate on us, and you're talking about the financial elites that are running, you know, the Treasury Department and the Federal Reserve, I suppose. And I noticed that you also, on one of your things I was watching the other day, you're talking about basically, you want to talk about the New World Order, you're talking about Goldman Sachs. Is that accurate, this financial coup d'etat that you mentioned that took place? Is largely orchestrated by Goldman Sachs?
Yeah, well, first of all, again, the headlines that we cover are found on maxkaiser.com, K-E-I-S-E-R. That's where we kind of aggregate all the information and the headlines. So if listeners are interested in following these types of stories, that's a good place to go. Plus, we just did a show, The Oracle, which I think Alex is going to be on the show in the next 2 or 3 weeks. It goes on an international broadcaster, and we try to make sense of all this stuff, and that's also on the web. But, okay, the question of Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs inherited, in a lot of ways, the dynasty from J.P. Morgan, and, of course, J.P. Morgan is still alive and kicking. And these two banks are really at the heart of the U.S. banking establishment, banking cartel. And as you know, a lot of people, there's a revolving door between Goldman Sachs and the federal government. So Hank Paulson came from Goldman Sachs. He went into the government. He was a Treasury Secretary. He'll probably end up going back and working in the finance sector. Tim Geithner.
Mr. Cash Carey.
Right. Cash Carey, also Goldman alumni. Robert Rubin, Goldman alumni. I believe Tim Geithner, also Goldman alumni. So the Goldman is really training, you know, for these guys, and this, where they're concentrated, they have huge profit machine. They are doing really questionable things. For example, last year they were selling bonds on behalf of a customer. At the same time, they were selling them short in the open market and driving the price down. So there was a clear case of double dealing. You know, and this type of thing, if you or I did it, it's a clear case of double dealing, and yet at that level, it seems to be completely overlooked.
Yeah, where's the financial police when you need them, huh?
Well, the financial police is supposed to be the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, but it's overworked, understaffed, it seems to be a captured regulator, just like these rating agencies like Moody's, S&P, Fitch. They seem to be in the pocket of the industry they're supposed to be supervising, and they're not actually in independent agencies. They're doing independent research and independent regulation. And as a result, you've got the growth of huge concentration of wealth and power. It makes its way into Washington, and then they pass laws that make it much easier for banks and brokers to continue these huge schemes. You know, that Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme is really a model, if you will, for almost everything that's gone on in the U.S. financial sector over the past 15, 20, 20 years, really. You know,
in layman's terms, you're just saying that the foxes are guarding the hen house, and that's the way it is.
Yeah, well, that's true. You know, that's the way it was back in Calvin Coolidge's day in the 1920s, which led to the crash and the Depression. And things that were established as a result of the Depression, like the Securities Act of 1933 and 34, the FDIC insurance, the SEC, all these things that came as a result of government re-regulating these guys, over the time since then, they were washed out of existence. You know, Clinton, both Democrats and Republicans, did their job in defanging the regulatory bodies to the point where we're right back to the Calvin Coolidge's day and the roaring 90s and the roaring double zeros.
Run by a whole bunch of crooks.
Now there's a huge crash. And,
Max, I'm going to have to cut you off. We're just about out of time. Max Kaiser.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Okay, on this January the 30th, 2009, this is Bob Dacey sitting in for Alex Jones. Alex has the day off today. Asked me to come in and host the show again, and I'm flying by the seat of my pants. Interview with Max Kaiser was quite interesting. He's like way above my level in financial things, but I think I handled myself relatively well, I think. And speaking of financial advisors, we have Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster on the line. Bob, are you there?
No, I'm not here.
You're not here. Well, then, is this a ghost I'm talking to then?
It certainly is. The apparition of the day.
Were you following the previous part of the show?
No, I did not. I just came on.
Yeah, you know, financial. You've got a newsletter, right? And you advise people on what to do in this crazy financial world in order to try to survive. Is that the idea? Tell us about what you do, just to set the stage.
Well, the newsletter does that. We recommend stocks, both long and short, in the market and commodities, and we try to project events that are going to happen in the future. Like 2 years ago, we said we were in a recession. About a year ago, some other experts discovered it, and then last month, our government discovered it.
Is the government going to discover that we're in a depression a year after we're in it, or what? How's that going to work out?
No, I think probably about 2 years after. But I have come out and said that the depression started this week, and the depression is an acute, very serious recession.
That's the way the
government will probably term it, but this depression is going to be far more difficult and longer to get out of than the previous one.
Well,
and
Bob, based on what yardstick did you determine that we are now in a depression? I'm kind of curious. What's the difference?
The GDP in the last quarter and in this quarter will be both negative. And when you have two negative GDP months in a row, you're on your way, especially if you're in a recession already. And I suspect that the second quarter of this year will be negative. And if they get their money out into the system on this stimulus package it'll probably moderate for a couple of quarters, maybe three, and then it'll head down again. All the stimulus package is doing is prolonging the agony, and it's not creating any permanent jobs. Very little money is going out to the people. The reason that politicians don't want people to have money like they had this past year in the $168 billion stimulus package is that they said they'll pay their bills down. And that, in part, is probably true.
You mean they might get out of debt?
Yeah.
Oh, we can't be having
that. Yeah, they might even save it.
Well, they can't
believe that. So the politicians have decided that very little will go into the hands of the public. And
well, it looks like the Obama. It looks like the Obama stimulus package, though, is going to be more like more. You know, like, okay, we had the thing for the Republicans where they gave all the money to Wall Street, right? And now the new stimulus package, which they voted in, apparently is going to pass more money out to Joe Schmo, right? I mean, isn't that going to be better?
Yeah, but that's not what that's not what that package is going to do. There'll be some tax breaks and a few other things, but it's
buy groceries.
It's indirect.
Right. All right, Bob, hang on right there. We're going to be back after the break with Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster. This is Bob Dacey on the Alex Jones Show on the GCN Communications Radio Network.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents the Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
Yeah, and not only is there a war on for your mind, there's a war on for your money. And we've got Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster on, and we've been discussing the bailout. Bob, why won't the economic stimulus package work? Why is that?
You know, you need consumerism is what you need. 72% of the economy has been, over the last several years, made up, the GDP has been made up of consumer buying things. And my guess is it's probably dropped back to something on the order of 70%, maybe 71%. And I think this is going to continue, and where you need the stimulus is with the public. Package is talking about the only thing that directly affects people is tax credits, and they are going to create government jobs as well as government contract jobs, but they're all temporary. And one of the good things about what they're doing is in the educational field. The previous administration had virtually shut off any increases for education, and that would keep teachers teaching and in their classrooms. But the stimulus among the people is where it has to be, and it's not going to be there. And, you know, the argument in Congress about people saving the money, or dollars that are saved go to the bank and the bank uses them. That's good. It's very good, as a matter of fact. And maybe that'll get Americans to mend their ways. Up until about 6 months ago, there was a negative 0.5% in savings. In other words, people were saving more than they were making. And now it's plus 2.8%, which is a start. And where would we like to see it? 10 or 15% if possible. There are some nations that save 35% and 40% of income. I'm not saying that America should do that, but paying money into savings is good. Paying off bills is good, because the money goes back to whomever you borrowed it from, and they can use it to strengthen their balance sheet and maybe do something constructive with it. And so the stimulus package is not bad, it's just not good and lasting. And Congress and the presidency continue to try to fix the problem, and they're not doing anything to fix it.
Yeah, but
nobody wants any pain.
The money is coming out of thin air, is it not? I mean, you know, where do they get all this money? They just print it out of nothing, and eventually,
well, they'll try to sell bonds, and they will be successful up to a certain point, and then the Treasury is going to have to sell bonds to the Federal Reserve, who creates money out of thin air to do that, and then they give the money to the Treasury Department, which in turn spends it and immediately monetizes it, which means it's immediately inflationary. And I suspect that's been going on already. They lie about everything, and you can't really find out what they're doing. So what you have to do is guess what they're doing, you know, on a qualitative basis, you know, not some harebrained scheme.
That's the point I was trying to make with Max Kaiser, who's a previous guest, is I don't see how you can come up with any accurate data, because they lie and they cheat and they manipulate everything, and how do you know what's really going on? You know, I do have a rudimentary understanding of what causes inflation, and basically, you know, tell me where I'm wrong. You know, you keep making more and more money without a commensurate rise in the level of goods and services to buy with that money. It drives down the value of the money, and therefore you have what looks to be increasing prices, which is nothing more than the devaluation of the dollar. Is that correct, or am I all wet?
You're absolutely correct, and inflation can only be created by the monetary unit in America, known as the Federal Reserve. It cannot be created any other way, by creating more money in credit than what there are revenues coming into the Treasury. And so that's the end of it, and you're absolutely right.
So do you agree?
We are facing hyperinflation, and it's going to begin around March or April. Could be a little later, but it's coming.
Okay,
and yes, I know.
Let's define that, because you know, there's hyper. What is hyperinflation? And we're not talking about Zimbabwe yet. We're talking about what? What percent? You say? What range? You talking about?
Well, I think that I've seen a number of explanations to that, and the old classical example was 50% or higher. I think that anything over 15% is hyperinflationary. And we were just recently up to 13.625%. We're now back dabbling around 10. And that's because of the drop in commodity prices, and that has fed into the PPI, the producer price index, which has enabled people who use commodities to make things, create things. It allows them to have lower prices. But, you know, it's interesting that food prices have not abated. They're going higher. And so the savings have been elsewhere. But once this money and credit monetization clicks in a little bit later this year, then inflation's going to start back up again. But you're never going to get the true figures from government, because in 1980 they decided with the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, that they were going to change it. And it was a political and societal change. The change was to not let anybody know that we were having an inflationary problem.
Yeah, it's basically the
so this has been going on since then.
Into thinking that everything's fine. I want to ask this question, because this brings up this debate between financial advisors. Some of them are talking about, well, what's going to happen here, ladies and gentlemen, is we're going to have a deflation. And the other one say, no, we're going to have an inflation. And I'm trying to figure out where this is going to go out. In my own business, a retail hardware business, you know, I'm the local True Value hardware guy in Austin, Texas. That's what I do for a living, you know. I have seen for the last year or so these constant price increases coming from my suppliers. We'll get a printout, and it'll show you, you know, whatever item you used to buy for X amount of money is now Y amount of money. And you can look down the column and see what's going up and what's going down. And what I've seen in the last year and a half is just, you know, up, mostly 10, 11, 12%. That's just in, like, you know, regular stuff that people buy in a hardware store. I have this little window that I see into in terms of the whole big picture, because I sell a broad
variety of what consumer goods are. And so I wonder what is driving this deflation argument that a lot of financial advisors are talking about.
Well, I think it's an excellent question, and it's not easy to answer, but I'm going to try to make it as simple as possible.
You got you good when because, you know, that's neat, that's important because, you know, financial people tend to talk everybody over everybody's head, except for
Well, that doesn't help anybody. In June of 2005, housing began to peak, and it's been downhill since then. And as that happened, construction abated, and we had a general constricting within the building industry and the real estate industry. And then the price of homes went down or began their descent.
And Home Depot started laying off employees.
Yes, that's true. That's why we put a short on that one. In other words, we recommended that people sell the stock, even though they didn't own it, betting it would go down. And, of course, it did. Anyway, we were ahead of the curve on that. And when that happened, the value of homes went down. And you had a diminution of assets. A deflationary flare began. When that happened, the Federal Reserve started to increase money and credit in a big way. In fact, they went as high on the M3, which they don't publish anymore and haven't for a couple of years. They increased M3. The highest I saw was 17.5%. And usually that will relegate into about 13.5%. Now, the reason they did that was that they had to offset the effect of the deflation of assets, the deflationary bent in the economy. And they've been fighting that for over 4 years. Now, the result of that is that the deflationary drag is getting larger and stronger because more and more assets are losing their value. Now it's not only real estate, it's real estate bonds. Those are bonds with mortgages inside of them. And we all know who've been following things that these CDOs and SIVs have gone down precipitously in value. And then we look at bank balance sheets and the balance sheets of corporations, the same thing has happened. Well, that's going on, which is deflationary. We got the Fed is pumping away, and we've got this program and that program, and those banks got to be saved, and those brokerage houses, and those insurance companies, even General Electric and General Motors and Chrysler, maybe even Ford. So that's how they're offsetting it. So we get the same thing, two things going on at the same time.
A little bit of both. Okay, Bob Chapman with the International Forecaster. We'll be back with Bob after this break. Once again, this is Bob Dacey, substituting for Alex Jones on the Genesis Communications Radio Network. Dacey, back on the Alex Jones Show here on this 30th day of January 2009. We're talking with Bob Chapman, the International Forecaster. And I got to admit, Bob, I'm confused. We got inflationary pressures all over the place. We got some temporary deflation. And you've got the Chinese don't want to buy our debt anymore. And we got people getting thrown out of work like nobody's business. And what does the average guy do in this environment that we're going into, in this depression that we're descending into? What do you tell a guy, some, you know, average Joe Blow on the street? What do you tell him?
Well, we've been doing this telling people what to do for a long time on the radio. I've been on Genesis 11 or 12 years, and I knew this was coming, and we got people out of the stock market in 2000, got into gold and silver related assets, and They've been there for the last 8 or so years, profitably so. But I want to finish answering that, and I hope that people understand that we simultaneously have deflation and inflation going on. Enough inflation to smother deflation, to keep it down, to keep it from raising its ugly, irretrievable head. Because once it takes over, it's dreadful. I mean, everything just shrivels up and dies. Ultimately, historically, we find that in inflationary binges like the one we're seeing now, it goes on and all of a sudden, for some reason, it stops. And usually that reason is borrowers stop borrowing. And lenders can't really find anybody to borrow, lend to. And so when that happens, the whole thing goes down into deflation. And that will happen. It's a ways away. I don't know how far. But what you have is a problem that's being surmounted in the short term, and it's for the last 4 or 5 years now, and that is a short term in economic history. You have the suppressionary process. So the deflationists and inflationists are both right, probably for different reasons, but the point is, that's the way it is, and it will go on that way until the system breaks, and then it will go totally into deflation. Now, to answer what people should do, first of all, hopefully people have cleared their credit card and revolving debt, and they've done that. They have to get food, dehydrated, freeze-dried food in a water filter. They should have a method of defending their family. And then after that, they should be buying gold and silver coins. Silver, because it's a known value. Things like the American Eagle, or 90% junk silver, as it's called. And gold coins. Because the only true money is gold. And all the currencies in the world are fiat, with the exception of the euro, which is about now about 7% backing in gold. Otherwise, as far as I know, there are no others. So the whole world essentially has
93%. The euro is 93% fiat, 7% real. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And so anyway, all currencies are going to be devalued, and there's going to be massive default. I don't know when, but it is going to happen. And we're well on our way to that. And if you look at charts, to make it simple, you'll see where over a period of time, the last 5 years, that all currencies have steadily, in different degrees, gone down against gold. And that is the proof of the pudding right there. And that is going to continue. And that's why it's so important to be in gold and silver. And so beyond keeping your job, trying to get rid of debt, getting prepared for the day that you might lose your job, and I expect 30% or more of Americans will be out of work, and 15% are out already. Again, you can't use the government statistics because they don't tell the truth.
You don't believe the government? The government doesn't
Hardly.
Say that. No, I think isn't the rule of thumb, if they want to downplay something, you multiply it by a factor of three, and you're probably about right. You know. So what is the official unemployment statistic from the U.S. government?
Well, they have three of them.
One
of them is the short term that you read about, the 7.2%.
Okay.
Then they have another one called U3, which is long term, and their long term figure is 15%. And then you have the intermediate term, which is U6, which they're calling at 12.75%. And even they're lying about them.
All right, hang on. We'll be back in a bit.
Baby, 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 I'm gonna leave you.
We're on the march. The Empire's on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Steve Shank. eFoods does it again. The three-day responder provides one adult with 3 days worth of healthy, delicious, easy-fix food. The price of the three-day responder is almost ridiculous at $21.95 for actually 12 meals plus snacks. When you taste the food in the three-day responder, you'll understand why families trust eFoods Direct to provide healthy, delicious food for every need. Whether you're hunting, playing, or responding to an emergency, the food in the three-day responder is easy to fix and ready to go. Food is an everyday need. The three-day responder is for the time when food should be the last thing you have to worry about. The three-day responder, $21.95. Sometimes the best things do come in the smallest packages. Call 800-409-5633. On the web, eFoodsDirect.com. That's 800-409-5633. On the web, eFoodsDirect.com.
On September 11th, 2001, along with hundreds of my fellow troops, I went to Ground Zero, and we knew what to do. Or at least we thought we did.
Truth Rising is a breakthrough 9/11 film that finally gives first responders a platform to tell their story.
Whitman, EPA director, on the 18th made a statement that the air was safe to breathe.
This film follows the growing momentum of 9/11 Truth as brave souls throughout the world take action against their global masters.
He had his hand over the radio while he was getting a countdown. He takes his hand off and you hear 3, 2, 1, and it was boom, 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 boom.
This is an emergency transmission worldwide. Download Truth Rising at prisonplanet.tv and aggressively spread it worldwide, or order the DVD at Infowars.com. If we don't expose the government-sponsored terror, they're going to commit more acts and bring in martial law.
The new multipolar inline and portable water system, new from hempusa.org. Now you can restructure and degas your water supply from any source, rendering chemicals harmless to the human body by polarizing the molecular structure. Imagine a softer, smoother water with increased oxygen that helps the nervous system and brain. There are no filters to buy, and it can be taken anywhere, making it our number one new product from hempusa.org. This water system will descale all piping, hot water heaters, and appliances is due to heavy buildup of hard minerals. Detoxification may result with restructured water by easily entering the fine capillaries of the human body by dissolving stones and toxins. With extreme positive effects on plants, vegetables, and fruits, improved taste, color, size, and yield with approximately 30% less water usage. There are multiple sizes also available for farms and commercial use. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. That's 908-691-2608.
All right, Bob Dacey back on the Alex Jones Show, talking with Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster. We were discussing the true unemployment rate. Bob, you want to finish up with that thought? What is the true unemployment right now?
Well, I think the fairest figure to use is the U6 figure, which comes in government numbers at 12.75%, and it includes short-term employment as well as people who in the recent past have stopped receiving state unemployment checks. And that figure is, of course, Mickey Moused. I have that figure at 15%, not 12.75%, and that's where I come up with the 15%. If you go to the long-term numbers, they're calling them 15%, when in fact they're about 17.75%.
And then every day you see more people getting laid off by the droves, right? I mean, every day in the paper there's several thousand more. And, it continues to get worse and worse and worse. You're talking about a depression here, right? That's what you're talking about. Right.
That's what I'm talking about. I think the only one I've seen alluded to that is the chief economist from Merrill Lynch, David Rosenberg. And he hasn't said it that for sure we are, but all the telltale signs are there. So this time around, I have somebody who has economic stature with a large firm saying almost the same thing that I am. He's not sure we're there yet, but we're very close. I know we're in it.
Well, you're talking about one of the things you need to do in order to protect yourself from this type of a financial environment, or actually a world environment, is to collect gold and silver in physical possession. Just so happens that we have Ted Anderson on the line. Ted, are you there?
Yeah, I guess if you want to call it the line, I'm in studio up here in Genesis Communications Network, and I've just been listening to the show and watching the economic things pass by here. Bob, I mean, gold today has been as high as 929.80, or 929.60. It's almost seen 930 today, and that's up currently right now at $16.70. Silver's up, too. It's a hot trading day. I can tell you we've got a lot of people that are buying, and they should be, too. I mean, with the Fed threatening to buy a lot more U.S. treasuries, to take printed money and to buy U.S. treasuries, the way, if you define that by what's going on, that means that the United States citizens are printing all this money. We're giving it to the Federal Reserve System, hypothetically, and they're going to come in and buy treasuries, which means they're going to lend it back to us, and they're going to do enough of that to try to stimulate the economy. Oh, my God. I've been just, like, looking at it going, okay, so now we're going to be on the hook for how much in taxes to service the interest on this debt? I mean, I know, Bob, you look at this stuff, and it baffles me to even think that the public is stupid enough to buy into this thing. It just drives me crazy.
Well, I understand that I'm going to get me a big old block of government cheese and a big old flagon of government wine, and I'll just be able to sit around all day long eating my government cheese and drinking my wine. I don't have anything to worry about because they're going to bail me out, right?
That's the way I see it. Bob, go ahead. I'm sorry for interrupting, man.
No, I was going to say, if you do that and you drink too much wine, you might have some liver problems.
But, well, then I'll give me some free government health care then.
Well, I don't know about that, and whether you get it or not remains to be seen.
Get it.
You might have to wait in line for a long time like they do in Canada and other places.
You'll get it. Maybe not where you want it, but you'll get it. Yeah.
Well, this is an extraordinary day in gold and silver, and it has been extraordinary for the past week or so. And in the forecaster, we told everybody about 2 weeks ago to go all in. Everything you've got, go into gold and silver. Related assets, and that was when gold was around 830. So it's up about $100 since then. And we're going to go up and test the high up here shortly. And I don't think it's going to hold. I think there's too many people throughout the world, and Ted can tell you more about this, who are buying coins and bars, and the dealers of the world are having a hard time fulfilling those orders from time to time, right, Ted?
Oh, there's no question about that. As a matter of fact, I'm getting calls from all over the world, largely in part because of this very show and how many people listen overseas. But yeah, indeed, I've got people that are buying from England, people that are buying from Australia, Germany, Japan. I mean, just all over the world. And main reason is they're having a harder time buying it locally. They'd prefer to have me ship it to them overseas because there's nobody that has the stuff. And I'm in there buying, I told Alex I'm carrying this deal at about the cost on the stuff was right around when gold is at 830 is when I locked in on these francs and British sovereigns, and I still have just a few of those left. I've repriced what I have now. Looking at francs, I have them at 214 on this deal, but if I'm in the marketplace trying to get them, they're 232. What I really feel good about is the people that took advantage of my deal just before that when I bought them at 700. Now those people are able to sell them back to me at a nice profit. They were buying them at 202, and the market's much higher than that on the buy side of the market, which is just unheard of, that within 1 week's time of buying something, you can actually sell them back and take a nice little profit. But I don't think you should, because what's going on in the marketplace here, you better hold on to this stuff. But then what I do have right now is I do have the sovereign. It's at 263, and I have the franc at 214. I challenge anybody to look anywhere in the United States or across the globe and find those coins for less. You won't, because the market price is up much higher. And the other thing, Bob mentioned junk silver. We have a fairly good supply of junk silver. I really recommend that stuff. We also have the Mercury dimes. I'm out of the Walking Liberty halves. I've completely sold out. Last time I was on air, we were talking about the Buffalo coin. I am 100% sold out on those. I can't get enough to even fill an order for one right now. And that's how the market is. The gold prices are rising. There's no question about it that every time that happens, not only just to Midas Resources, but to every gold dealer across the world, they've got a lot of customers coming in the door trying to buy. And that happens every time the market goes up. So I would suggest if you're at all interested in gold, now's the time to be getting in.
Yeah, if you can get a hold of it, right? I mean, Ted, you seem to be able to get a hold of it when other people can't. I noticed that I've seen all these statistics about, well, you know, you order some stuff and maybe 5 or 6 weeks from now, maybe you'll get it because they really don't have it yet and they got to go scrambling around finding it.
Dealers can afford to do that in a soft market, and they always know they can get the material. Right now, I don't trust that. I'm out buying right now. And when gold dropped down there at that 870 level, I said it right on air. I said, Alex, I'm buying right now. I'm accumulating, and this stuff is going to be in my warehouse, in my safe. So it's available for delivery when people want to take advantage of it. I'm counting on the fact. I mean, the downside to that is that what if gold goes down and I'm sitting on a big position? But the flip side to that is how many problems do we actually have going on in the United States and across the world right now? The central banks are doing everything in their power to try to suppress the prices of gold and silver because they want people to stay in their fiat currency they're printing. But the laws of physics will have it here that the demand for gold is much stronger than the central banks are able to suppress it, and so even though they're one of the largest holders of physical gold in the world, they don't even want to sell it themselves. They know their currencies are doomed. They're right at the end of the rope on this stuff. And so, anyways, yeah, if you're interested. Midas Resources, you can reach us at 1-800-686-2237. Probably one of the best deals that I have that I'm offering right now is that Creature from Jekyll Island book, and you get a silver dollar in it. It's $26.45, and that'll at least get you one silver dollar for you to keep. I'm suggesting, and you can do what you want, is that you pick up the book from us, keep the silver dollar, read the book, and then find at least one other person that needs to read that book and give it to them. That's about central banking, how money comes into existence. If the entire United States knew how this system worked right now, that system would be thrown out on its ear and we'd be back to constitutional money. Everybody's, they want answers and they're not getting it from the mainstream media, and this is one of the ways to do that. The other thing, too, I got to say, starting Monday, Bob's newsletter, that International Forecaster, which explains this very well, and also that Creature from Jekyll Island spot that you're hearing on Genesis Communications Network, will be playing on Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, George Norrie. I'm already playing it on the premier radio networks, or the talk radio network shows like Laura Ingraham and Humphreys and their lineup, and I've got it going in several other locations. And the main thing is, I think, really more than anything else, the country's hungry for answers. Now they need to get them there, and they're not going to get them from the mainstream media. They really need to know what this Federal Reserve thing is about and central banking and actually how it affects our economy and our liberties. That's the main thing. Our liberties are just being slipped away. I don't know why they think the answer is more government and less liberty. That's not what needs to occur. We need more liberty and less government. Let the market take care of itself. All these bailouts. I mean, I'm hearing the Republicans, Democrats from both sides talking about how we need more bailout and, it needs to be done this way. They're arguing over the details of how the money should be doled out. I mean, they shouldn't be doing it in the first place. Anyway, that's just my opinion. I know that I'm in the minority right now. About 80% of the people want a bailout right now. No, less than, I think it was less than 20% wanted it before. But the, George Bush was saying it as soon as Barack Obama came up with a bailout plan, now 80% want it. I mean, go figure. It's the same thing.
I think that has something to do with sheeple, I think, there, Ted. You know, they're following a little, me too. You know, I want some bailout. I'm a small businessman, and I'm not going to get any kind of bailout. I'm going to get nothing, you know. And I just laugh about it. I just, the whole ethic of our whole society is that, well, gee, just print up some money and paper over the problems and don't attack the cause of the problem. Just paper it over with more money and everything will be just fine. They just keep shoving the consequences further on down the line. And the more they pile them up, the worse they're going to be when the thing finally goes kaflooey.
Yeah, well, at least I know that you're smart enough to get away from this paper fiat currency that we have. I know Bob is, and I certainly am, and I know that a lot of the people out there have. I just have to say, at this particular time, the warning bells are ringing, and it's more like a siren blasting the horn. Now is the time to move. And if you're interested in finding out more, if you really don't understand the system, and I know there's a lot of people that are out there listening to Bob Chapman and scratching their head going, what the world is he talking about? I don't quite understand what he's talking about here and why. That Creature from Jekyll Island book lays it out pretty much in black and white. And for $26.45, the retail price on this thing is $24. Now with silver where it is, silver dollars up over $20 a piece. You add it up, it's like about $40, $45 worth of product. And you put the postage on there, it gets up to $50, and I'm selling it for $26.45. I don't know how I can make a better deal for you.
Ted, would you say that the reason why there's this big decoupling between the price of physical metal and the paper price? You know, you read in the paper that silver is whatever it is, $11 or $12, and you're selling that the coins are $20. This huge discrepancy between what used to be a bullion coin, which was supposed to kind of closely follow the value of say silver, that this huge discrepancy. Would you agree that the reason for that is that the powers that be can suppress the paper price of the metal all they want, but they can't suppress the real value?
Yeah, it's because of, it's like fractional reserve banking. What they're doing is they're manipulating the spot price of silver or gold by getting into the futures market. And I know Bob would agree with this too. It's the futures market that's causing the spot price to dip when it does, and that just means that, you know, somebody's in there selling a lot of the times short, meaning selling something that they don't even have. I don't know, Bob, why don't you touch on that one?
Well, mostly it's the United States government. On the COMEX, they have what are called commercials, and these are the pros. And the commercials run the market. They're supposed to know everything. And not too long ago, they were short. They were betting gold was going to go down, and they were wrong. And they obviously, you know, took some losses. What their relationship is with the United States government, we don't know. Because the United States government nor the commercials will tell us. But again, now they're short big, and they're getting their heads handed to them again. Gold is trading close to 928 right now, up $23 or so. Silver's up 41 cents, so they've got a problem. But what happens is that on the futures trading market, that historically less than 1% of those who took a contract on the long side of the market, betting that the price would go up, took delivery. Now that figure, we guess, is somewhere between 16 and 20%, which means that the COMEX probably has to go someplace else and borrow either gold or silver, but we're primarily talking about gold here, in order to fulfill the demand for the forward long contracts. And if people continue to do that, it's going to put a squeeze on the COMEX exchange. And we expect that is going to happen over the coming months, and it has already begun. December was a big month for contract deliveries. And, of course, you have COMEX on there screaming to the client, the customer, you know, we don't want you to take delivery. and they're making it as difficult as possible. But that is not a real market if you can't get delivery. And this is what's going on. And sooner or later, if enough delivery is taken over the next several months, they're going to have to either borrow gold and silver or they're going to have to shut down. And I think that's what we're headed for. But it's a make-believe market. It's just a market where people trade things, in this case gold and silver, with no intention of ever taking delivery. Physical market's totally different. I mean, you buy it or you don't. It's pretty simple. And right now, people all over the world are scrambling to get out of their currencies to buy gold and silver in one form or another. And that's going to continue, and it's going to heighten. And this is going to go on for 2 or 3 years until the inflationary aspect of what central banks are doing, and just not the Fed, the G20 is doing it. I hear the music.
Yeah, that music means we're going to have another break. This is Bob Dacey. I'm substituting on the Alex Jones Show. We got Bob Chapman on the line, and also have Ted Anderson of Midas Resources. I want to go to 1-888-294-6187 and talk to the guys at Midas Resources in order to get some of that gold while you still can. Be back after the break. Okay, Bob Dacey for Alex Jones on the Alex Jones Show on the GCN Radio Network. We've got Bob Chapman, the International Forecaster. That's theinternationalforecaster.com. If you want to go to the website, theinternationalforecaster.com. And we also have Ted Anderson with Midas Resources. Another phone number you can use to call Ted Anderson is 1-800-686-2237. 1-800-686-2237. Well, guys, we got a big mess on our hands. What are we going to do about it? Ted?
Yeah, I'll step in here. But I don't know, Bob. I was waiting there for Bob to, you know, the only thing that I can think of is that educating the people. I know that Bob might have some other answers too, but you know, we're not ready. We're not ready for real solutions yet. For some reason, that our political mass, the people that are in Washington D.C., by the large part, don't understand what's going on, nor do their constituents that basically get them elected.
I think you're being kind. You're being kind about the politicians not knowing what's going on. I think they're a bunch of crooks.
Well, they are very well crooks, but I don't think they understand economics.
They understand how to line their own pockets.
Well, that's true, and they'll sell us out for a dime, you know. But the fact of the matter is. If you asked, you know, I was listening to Ron Paul on the banking committee when he's talking about all these different things, and most of these people didn't even know that the Federal Reserve was a private agency. You know, I mean, that it wasn't a branch of government, and the fiat system, the whole thing, this whole concept of what we've been sold into in 1913, which put us into the position where we now have a fiat currency system and we have a federal income tax. We didn't have that before the system was in place. And now they're, you know, when the Federal Reserve System buys U.S. government securities, they're basically saying that we're going to lend the government the money. We owe the taxes as the citizens to pay back the interest on that debt. They've created this from nothing. They have nothing into it at all. There is no labor involved in printing money for nothing. And yet they're able to, you know, to collect the interest on it. And no surprise at all to me that the United States government has gotten so far into debt now that we no longer can even service the interest on the past due debt, much less take on this new I don't know what is it? It's coming up on $2 trillion bailout now. We just can't afford it. There isn't enough GDP to cover that. And I was just about to say before coming back from the break, you know, that international forecaster, I did it without that FORE in there, and you don't end up at the internationalforecaster.com. So when you're going there, look at it. Look, it's the international forecaster with the E in there .com, and you'll get right to it. And there's a lot of good information there. And if you haven't subscribed to the International Forecaster yet, you know, I think you're losing out. I mean, Bob has a lot of good information in there, and you're going to get it. Yeah, I don't know. Bob, you should probably cover that.
Yeah.
Well,
we got a few seconds left in this last segment. Go right ahead.
It's all the things that you don't find in the media, things that you really need to know. And so you can get a free introductory copy, and you can do that by going to our site, and that address is theinternationalforecaster.com, or you can call toll-free to 877-479-8178. That's 877-479-8178. And we produce twice a week, around 35 pages each time by email, and twice a month in hard copy. And you're missing something very important if you're not a subscriber.
Okay, Bob Chapman with the International Forecaster. I want to thank you very much for coming on the segment of the Alex Jones Show. I think, unfortunately, the man knows what he's talking about. And unfortunately, Ted Anderson also knows what he's talking about. In the next last hour of the show, we're going to have Kurt Nimmo coming in studio. We're going to have some fun with him. I've never met the guy before, but we're fixing to find out. And we'll see you in a bit. Bob Basie for Alex Jones. Fast. We got one more to go. This is Bob Dacey substituting for Alex Jones. Today, this 30th day of January 2009, on the Alex Jones Show on the Genesis Communications Radio Network. This show is the tip of the spear in the fight against the New World Order, and there's no question about it. Speaking of the tip of the spear, I have one of Alex Jones' writers in studio with me right now, Kurt Nimmo. Just met him a little while ago. I admire your work, Kurt. I've read a whole bunch of your articles, and I've learned to respect what you have to say. Welcome to the Alex Jones Show.
Thanks, Bob. Good to be here.
Well, I think we're going to open it up to some potpourri. We're going to put out the number for phone calls. That number, if you want to participate in this, is 1-800-259-9231. That's 1-800-259-9231. If you want to participate in this thing, if you want to ask Kurt Nimmo some questions or whatever you want to do, it's fine with me. Kurt, what have you been working on lately?
Well, I'm down here in Austin to work on the website. We've been making some changes with Prison Planet TV and just getting up to speed and seeing the new facility.
How did you end up getting involved with Alex to begin with?
I listened to his radio show about 4 years ago, and I did a political blog at the time. And one thing led to another, and the next thing I know, I was working for the guy.
How many articles do you think you've written for InfoWars.com?
Oh, gosh. Hundreds.
Hundreds?
Hundreds. I don't really keep track, so I don't know. Exactly.
Do you have any particular things that you're most interested in right now? Things that you're working on that you want to talk about?
Well, lately we've been covering Obama and the Obama administration.
Obama?
Yeah, and it kind of dovetails with Alex's latest film.
Obama? Wait! I got an article right here. I am thrilled to death you said that. I got an Obama section right here in front of me. This is from the American Statesman the other day. Obama vows to achieve energy independence. Here's a quote from him. It will be the policy of my administration to reverse our dependence on foreign oil. Wait a minute. Kurt, didn't he want to make sure we don't do any domestic exploration and drilling and stuff?
Yeah, it's kind of a contradiction.
So
there, isn't it?
Tell me, sir, how do you reduce our dependence on foreign oil if you don't let us produce domestic oil?
Well, possibly we'll be using less oil in general.
Oh, you mean possibly our standard of living is going to have to crater? Is that what you think this might be what he's saying?
Absolutely.
I think that's exactly what he's saying. Look, ladies and gentlemen, y'all aren't stupid. The fact that you listen to the Alex Jones Show means you're not stupid. Figure it out. If they won't allow the Alaska stuff to come online, if they won't go up to Gull Island, where Lindsey Williams says there's more oil than under all of Saudi Arabia, if they won't, and natural gas just pouring out of the ground, they got to drive it back in with pumps all the time. If they won't let us do that, and Obama's going to keep all that stuff away from us, then how in the world is this clown going to reduce our dependence on foreign oil? There's only one other way, ladies and gentlemen, and that is to take our standard of living and flush it down the toilet.
Right. Well, that's part of the banker agenda. I mean, that's what the climate change thing's all about, is reducing our standard of living.
That's right. But you know, another way to reduce things is to kill people.
Mm.
I have an article here that Obama is planning a $1 billion bailout for the abortion industry.
Right.
Let me see this. Last week, let me read this. This is from onenewsnow.com. About a couple of weeks ago, last week, the Obama-Biden transition project posted a report on its website that calls for the dramatic policy reversals on abortion, including a $1 billion in taxpayer money for international abortion groups like Planned Parenthood. All right, so there you have it. No, another, just kill more people and they won't be using resources.
Right, well, we've got a bunch of eugenicists running the country, so there you go.
Hey, that's change, isn't it? All right, well, right after the break, we'll be back here on the Alex Jones Show with Kurt Nemo. This is Bob Dacey, and hang on in there. We're going to take some phone calls.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
We are back on the Alex Jones Show. This is Bob Dacey substituting for Alex Jones. And in studio, we have Kurt Nemo. And we were discussing Kurt Nemo's interest in our new president, Obama. And I was making a comment that one of the first things he's done, actually, I'm looking at an article from another writer for Infowars.com and for PrisonPlanet.com, Paul Joseph Watson. He wrote this a few days ago. Obama's first act is taxpayer money to fund abortions of black babies. How do you like that change, y'all? First sentence, the sickest irony amidst the euphoria of the inauguration of America's first black president is that one of Obama's very first actions in office will be to ensure that millions more black babies are aborted in third world countries, with American taxpayers picking up the tab. Kurt, what? What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, this is just a trade-off on you know, it's like a tag team thing between the Bush administration and the Obama administration and the Clinton. Obama's just basically a regurgitation on the Clinton administration. They have their social policies, you know, their social, you know, and part of that is for the so-called liberals, if you want to use their false right-left paradigm, is abortion. Or choice, as they call it.
It's choice. It's not abortion. It's choice. Right. You know, I always thought, you know, in my opinion, in my humble opinion, when you look at abortion, look, you have a choice to kill something of your own flesh and blood or not kill something of your own flesh and blood. It's my belief that if your conscience was ruling your decision-making process, you'd probably feel better about not killing something of your own flesh and blood?
Well, to them, it's tissue until it's born.
Yeah, just, right.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, you know, the viability argument, I'm going to make lots of people mad now. The viability argument, well, it's not viable. It's not viable, so you can kill it. Well, guess what? It's not viable after it comes out either.
That's right.
So give me a break. That and the other argument, I love the it's the woman's body. She should be able to do with it whatever she wants. Well, guess what? It's no longer just her body anymore. That argument is ridiculous.
Well, the whole agenda is pushed by Margaret Sanger and the, you know, Planned Parenthood and all of that for decades. It's part of the eugenicist agenda.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I people that. I know abortion is the thing that really, you never bring up abortion. You know, it makes everybody mad. Because everybody's got some skeleton in its closet somewhere that they don't want to be reminded of. A lot of people are that way. And they just don't want to be reminded of it, and they take it personal. But, the Constitution says, or I think, what is it, the preamble says that we're supposed to establish this Constitution to protect the life and liberty of ourselves and our posterity. But what is our posterity?
Mm.
I think our posterity is those who are coming after us. Well, I think the Founding Fathers didn't mean there was a 9-month window where you could kill our posterity.
Right.
I don't think that they meant that. But, you know, what the heck, it's a woman's body and she can do whatever she wants and government should butt out. You know, it's funny, government should butt out of a lot of things, but you know, this thing about, you know, killing a little guy that's going to be maybe president of the United States one day. Who knows? If you just let things take their natural course, there's something wrong with that. That's all.
Right.
That's all.
This is going to be pushed under the Obama administration. It's part of the, you know, the liberal agenda, so to speak.
Yes, it'll be change. It'll be change. When you pay the abortionist for however much he's paid to kill your baby, he'll give you some change, I guess. I don't know. Well, you want to take some phone calls?
Sure.
All right. We've got Leo in Massachusetts, our first caller on the Alex Jones Show today. Leo, are you there?
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. Yeah, would you say that abortion is a eugenicist wet dream, so to say?
Well, you know, it's a good way to get rid of those useless feeders before they ever start feeding, I guess.
That's right.
Actually, I take a kind of a midway position, and I get hammered by both sides. I think that after the second trimester, the fetus is viable outside of the womb and therefore should have full constitutional rights. I think before that, you're still a tag-along. You're an aspect of, rather than a separate individual. That's why, you know, it's a controversial position to take.
Oh, it is. I disagree with you in a friendly manner. You know, I have the unique ability to disagree with people in a friendly manner. I don't sit there and yell and scream at them.
Because I'm partially in your camp, is what
you know,
you're saying.
My deal there is, where do you draw the line? If you take this nine-month gestation period, you know, and you say, okay, let's draw a graph here. Okay, we're viable right here. We're not viable right here. It's okay to kill them at this point, but 24 hours later, it's not okay to kill them.
Yeah, I know the complexities you're adding into it.
My deal is that you is the benefit of the doubt argument,
right.
You know. And also, I would like to interview the fetus.
Oh, right. You know, anyway, can I get back to Mr. Nimmo?
Sure, go right ahead.
I understand you were a graphics person before. Is this true?
Yes, I was.
And where did you live before you moved out west?
I lived in Chicago.
Oh, and the Zionists chased you out of there, huh?
No, they didn't chase me out of there. What makes you think that?
I heard you were getting certain threats by certain peoples.
Yes, I was. When I criticized Israel, I did get some pretty pernicious threats, but that's water under the bridge at this point.
Well, I mean, would you have stayed there if that hadn't happened?
No, that didn't have anything to do with it. I decided to move out of Chicago because, quite frankly, I was a web designer and the job market pretty much vanished in Chicago when the so-called internet bubble burst in the early 2000s, late 90s.
But hasn't web design been shipped out to India and China now?
Pretty much for larger corporations. I started working for local firms in southern New Mexico. So I got a job there, and I'm working for Alex Jones.
Great. Anyway, welcome to the club, and I'm glad you're hitched up with a good guy. I just think that I want Alex to do more of a NPR voice on a regular basis just to cool himself out and make fun of NPR. I think he could do both. But I worry about him getting a heart attack from just jumping around like that and freaking out.
Well, Leo, I tell you what, I want to thank you for the call. I'm going to let you go. I want to comment on that. I have known Alex since, I guess, November of 98 when he first came into my store. And that ain't going to happen. Alex is Alex, and what you see there is what you get. You know, and the guy, you know, what he projects is what he feels, and he's like a bull in a china closet, and it's not going to change. Now, he can do really good imitations and other voices and whatnot for fun, but what you see is what you get with Alex. People always love to criticize Alex because he's so in your face, but look where it's got him. The guy is the tip of the spear of the whole dadgum freedom movement in the United States, and people criticize him for it, right?
Exactly.
And like, okay, great, wonderful, criticize him for it, but you can't argue with success. You know, I'm sitting here in this studio, this state-of-the-art, fantastic combination radio TV studio. It's going all over the world, millions of people. He's going to be rebroadcasting it four more times, I guess, or five more times or whatever before the next one pops up. You know, he's got all these websites with millions and millions and millions of hits. He's got all these documentaries. And by the way, you need to buy Alex Jones' documentaries. I got to plug Alex Jones' documentaries. and the other ones that are on there too. For example, I think one of the best documentaries produced is Loose Change Final Cut. That's the one that Jason Burmes and Dylan Avery did and Corey Rowe. And that you can get on Alex Jones' website, Loose Change Final Cut. And one of the reasons why it's one of the best ones out there is because I'm in it. How about that? Shameless plug. You know, so that one's a great one. Endgame's fantastic. I remember when one of the older films, 911 Road to Tyranny, came out. Absolutely. That was like a quantum leap in Alex's production ability. A just fantastic film about September 11th. You know, just Endgame, whatever, you name it, you go to InfoWars.com and click on the shop button and buy some of Alex's stuff, because they need the money to keep on doing this. And by the way, a few weeks ago, I was riding shotgun with Jason Burmes, and some caller called in and was griping about Alex Jones hijacking the freedom movement and the money aspect of it. And I just thought it was funny. You think all this stuff is cheap? You know, I'm lucky. My TV show is just pure volunteer. It's kind of like, you know, Alex is like a professional soldier in this battle, and I'm the militia. You know, I show up when I can. I got to go tend the store. But, man, I tell you what, you can't say enough good about Alex Jones. I hear so many people saying bad things about him. I guess, you know, when you're, what's the old expression? When you're over the target.
Over the target, you get the flak.
You get the flak. That's right.
Bob, I wanted to correct something that caller said. I didn't get threats when I was living in Chicago. It was after I was already in New Mexico that those threats for criticizing Israel started.
Well, you know, you're not supposed to criticize Israel. That's not, it's in the Constitution. It's the 11th commandment in the Constitution.
Right.
It says, thou shalt not criticize Israel because they can do no wrong. You know, I went after them pretty bad on my show the last few weeks about what they've been doing in Gaza. You know, I mean, gee whiz, it's like, am I going to get in trouble? Can I say this on the air? You know, the Holocaust thing was like, you know, never, never, never again. We've heard that over and over and over again, but the little asterisk was, you know, except we can do it to other people. You know, just nobody can do it
right.
to us.
And that goes back to Obama as well. I mean, that's part of his change, which is not change, is the policy in regard to Israel and what it's doing to the Palestinians has not changed under Obama. It's exactly the same.
Yeah, and there is no peace process, and there never has been one.
That's right.
Okay, we're going to go to a break now, and after the break, we'll be back with Kurt Nemo and phone calls. We got Chris in Mississippi and Gage in Florida and Ron in Arizona coming up on The Alex Jones Show.
Hi, this is Steve Shank. eFoods does it again. The three-day responder provides one adult with 3 days worth of healthy, delicious, easy-fix food. The price of the three-day responder is almost ridiculous at $21.95 for actually 12 meals plus snacks. When you taste the food in the three-day responder, you'll understand why families trust eFoods Direct to provide healthy, delicious food for every need. Whether you're hunting, playing, or responding to an emergency, the food in the three-day responder is easy to fix and ready to go. Food is an everyday need. The three-day responder is for the time when food should be the last thing you have to worry about. The three-day responder, $21.95. Sometimes the best things do come in the smallest packages. Call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. That's 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com.
Bad thing, too. This is Bob Dacey for Alex Jones. I don't have enough. We're going to be playing a video at the end of the show, so I'm going to be taking some callers real quick to be fair to the callers. We have Chris up in from Mississippi. Chris, are you there?
Hey, what's going on, man?
I'm doing all right. What's happening?
Oh, shoot, nothing much, man. I just wanted to, I know Alex is probably listening to the show. I am a subscriber, and appreciate everything he's doing leading the movement. Now, one thing I wanted to call and ask about is, I don't know if you would have any knowledge or anything like that, but I'd recently got a letter sent home from my son's school. He's in the government re-education camps. Unfortunately, can't afford to send him to a private school, but he had got a letter saying that they had tested him and he showed pretty high and wanted to give him a formal IQ test and throw him in some kind of gifted program. Now, my question about that was, is that more of a, have y'all run across anything saying that that's more of like a fast track toward the, you know, how they're re-educating our children? And you know what I'm trying to get at?
Well, I don't know specifically. I do know, I guess it's school district to school district, really. And the more local control you have over a school district, the better off you're going to be there. I don't have any problem myself with, you know, smarter kids being able to, you know, explore their intellect in better environment than your average government control center. The question is your local school district, you know, having their strings pulled by the federal government, or are they really independent? Is it really an independent school district? I wouldn't think anything bad about that if the kid's smart. You know, plus, if he's really smart, he might be able to figure out if they're trying to con him. Thank you for the call. I appreciate that. I got Gage in Florida up next. Gage, are you there?
Yes, here. I was looking on Northcom.mil, and at the bottom of it, it has Avon Flu. Now, I'm wondering why in the world would Avon Flu be on Northcom's site if it has something to do with the CDC? You know,
Kurt, you have it really.
Well, it's not just the CDC. The military is involved in the avian flu as well. I mean, they have contingency plans supposedly to NORTHCOM has contingency plans for, you know, national emergencies related to natural disaster and outbreaks of contagious diseases. So that's probably why it's there.
Because what I'm wondering is, I mean, it may sound conspiracy theory, but, you know, with all this weird stuff that's going on now with, you know, camps arising up, you know, from FEMA. You know, I'm wondering if this whole emergency camp thing is, you know, going to be something like Avon Flu, where they're going to say, oh, everyone's got Avon Flu, they need to go to the camps. You know what I'm saying?
Well, there could be some sort of a contrived thing, but, you know, I don't deal in what I don't know, and I don't know. I mean, you put it in the category, I wouldn't put it past them, Kurt?
No, I wouldn't put it past them either. Okay. They have any number of contingency plans, I think.
Okay, Gage in Florida, thank you very much for the call. We're trying to move quickly through here. I got Ron in Arizona up next. Ron?
Good afternoon, Ron. Gentlemen. According to the Bible, just before the Lord Jesus Christ returns, it says there's going to be a world government, a world church, and a world economy. And if we're living in the last days, we should be seeing signs of that, just as Alex Jones, yourself, and others are talking about. The problem I have is, if this is all true, why aren't the pastors talking about the move to create a new world order? I've been in church for over 50 years, and I've only heard one pastor from the pulpit ever talk about it, and I've only heard a few on the radio and TV talking about it.
Well, I'll try to answer that question. Ron, thanks for the call. I'm guessing it's just because we hadn't reached enough of them yet, and they've been propagandized too much. We just need to work on the pastors. That's the deal, because the other side's definitely working on them. Tell you what, we're not going to take more phone calls. I'm going to introduce something in the next segment. We've got a video of Alex Jones with a hip-hop artist by the name of KRS-One. They did a little video, and for the next coming out of the break, we're going to play this video that Alex shot with KRS-One, who is a, I don't know if he's a, what is he, a hip-hop artist? He's not a rapper. I guess there's some intersection there. I really don't know. And if we have any time at the very end of the show, we'll say goodbye. But for right now, Kurt Nemo, thanks for hanging in with us in this hour. And I may be back at the very end of the show to say goodbye. But for this is Bob Dacey for Alex Jones. And Alex, I'm sure, will be back on Monday.
You
what camera's going to be playing for our children. I want our children to see this now. Because the president just got in like, wow. But in 4 years, will we still like him? In 8 years, are we going to still hype him? What if he said we got to go into Iran and kill a million people? Will you still be down with the man? Uh-huh. You better wake up and smell the coffee. This not a radio station. Don't toss me. Me, when I'm on the microphone, I stand with people like Alex Jones. That's the crew I'm down with. I've never been about no government. I do for myself, speak for myself, teach myself, reach for myself. Hip-hop, you gotta do the same thing. Listen to me now while I rap and sing. The new world order, just put on a black face. Americans, you are in the process of globalization. You are in the process of a new world order. Just because it has a black face don't mean a thing. Real politics is about the people. The people. The people. Study. The Declaration of Independence, that's poetry. But the United States Constitution, that's laws, laws to me. Listen to the truth. I'm kicking it from the DJ booth. Before I leave tonight, I'm about to shine a light. 9-11 was an inside job. 9-11 was an inside job. 9-11 was an inside job. 9-11 was an inside job.
Yep, this is in my own words, the only words I got. First of all, the conversation we was having the other day was brilliant. I think it was very respectful of the fact of what America's feeling right now. What is most important is that we don't get caught up in emotional politics. As a black man in the United States, I can feel the emotion. I could feel the emotion of having a black first family in office. Like, for instance, Barack Obama, when we say a black person in office, we got to ease back because for the first time we really have an African American actually in office. To call him black is a disrespect to his mother, and I don't think that's fair. He comes from a biracial family, and that should be respected. I, more than anybody, am ecstatic over the fact that at least the racial barrier in the White House has been broken. But now let's get down with the truth. The truth. After we leave the emotionalism alone for a minute, what are we as Americans should be looking out for? How should we be getting prepared for what's about to come? Just because we have an African-American president doesn't mean that he's not going to continue the Bush agenda. I'm not dissing anybody, but a politician is a politician. And if I could say one thing to all people in the United States, it's this. America has broken its own rules, has broken its own laws. It's time for the citizenry of the United States to actually follow its own laws. If we stay steadfast to the Constitution, at least we won't be hit so hard with that global agenda. Here's what we were talking about the other day. If you really want to see what black governance is like, take a look at the mayors of major cities. When the cities were in power, we couldn't be the mayors. It's when the cities lost power, they put in black mayors. When the states had power, we couldn't be governors. But then when the states lose power, we got senators, governors, African-American senators and governors. Now the nation has lost power. The dollar has lost power. The world is global. Now you can get a black president because it doesn't matter. It's global now. So the real issue is this. Are you going to allow this system to tempt you into their prisons, into their job, into their psyche? Follow your purpose. This is what will defeat it all. If you're on your purpose, even death respects purpose. That's why I'm here, because I'm on my purpose. You don't think they hear me every day? You don't think they hear Alex Jones every day? You don't think they just heard? You don't think the FBI was out there right now? But you know what? They can't do nothing to a person who stands with the truth. Because I forgot who said it, but I'll quote it. It's a saying that says, what a disadvantage it is to only be able to die for your country one time. The concept is this. Don't get caught up. I said it on stage. They put a black face on the New World Order, and now we all happy. KRS ain't buying it. I never been a voter. This year I voted. Why did I vote? Because I want to be able to critique. That's why I voted. I didn't vote for Bush. I didn't vote for my...
Plus, you had to repudiate Bush. That's why I said...
Yeah. Even if I voted for Bush, he still was going to be... If I didn't vote or did vote, he still was going to be the president. And this is the point. This is the point. If they controlled it before, what do you... Why don't... What makes you think they're not controlling it now? The country was on a verge of revolution. They threw a black man up. Now we like this. Don't get caught up. Now I say this respectfully, because Barack Obama, I don't know the man. I don't know his agenda, but I know mine. Let's see if our agendas match. I stand with Dr. King. I stand with Malcolm X. I stand with the Black Panther Party. I don't know if my president can stand with that. But if my president frees Mumia Abdul-Jabbar, maybe he'll get my eye up. If my president could release political prisoners, maybe my eye will go up. If my president can stop ignoring police misconduct, maybe my eye will go up. But I'm not hopeful. And let me say this. Nature has a way of perfecting itself. This time, if they try to assassinate the president, I don't think it'll work. In fact, it may happen, but the ones who do it will finally be exposed. The concept is this. If Barack is true to the people, there will be some opposition. If there is opposition, we the people are the ones who are going to have to fight, not him. The real issue is, we used to say, which side are you on? Which side are you on? I'm not on the emotional side. I'm not on this black side. Whites, I don't know what that is. I got black police officers shooting at me every day. I got black senators that want to keep me in poverty. I don't know what that is, but I know what the truth is. The truth come out of anybody's mouth. The truth don't have no color. The truth is that people are hurting. The truth is that they trying to turn us into China. The truth is we're in so much debt that the only way out is revolution or war. So now the question is, what side are you on? Everyone is pointing to Barack right now, President Obama, as saying, you got to get the economy together. You got to get the economy together. When in fact, the president has very little to do with the economy. It's the Federal Reserve Chairman that at least sets the policy. The president can appoint or the president does appoint the Federal Reserve chairman, but after that, that's a privately owned company, the Federal Reserve Bank. They set the agenda. What you said earlier about if their plans fail, they get to blame it on Barack. Barack is like the manager of Burger King. All presidents are, including Bush. It's like this. When your fries are cold, if your burger is not done right, you go back to Burger King, America, or your government, and you say, my burger's cold. I want new fries. The manager comes out. Or first, you go to the cashier. That's the courts. You argue to the courts. The courts, if you can't get no justice with the cashier, you say, let me see the manager. I want to go to the Supreme Court. I want to see the president. The manager comes out. Hi, what can I do for you? Now, the manager can override the decisions of the cashier, but you never get to see the franchise owner of Burger King. If you really have a problem with your burger, you need to go see the franchise owner and tell them the actual make of the burger coming out the factory is wrong. What you're sending to all these little operations is wrong. We need to go to the top or to the bottom. We need to go to where the real architecture of government is. And it's not in a president. It's in a global scheme to make the 99% work for the 1%. And the 99% are going along with it because they're tempting you with everything you want. In rap, a rapper named T.I. put a record out. He said, you can have whatever you like. Americans love that. You can have whatever you like. That's the trick. Learn to live simple. They hate it. Learn to say, I'm good. You can keep it. They hate it. Walk with God. Walk with law. And never give up your gun. Don't be tempted. And leave the emotionalism out of politics. You know when you should get emotional? When injustice happens. That's when your emotions should rise up. You saw what happened the other day at that BART station in Oakland. Injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere. Dr. Martin Luther King. For me, I feel the pain of suffering people. I don't know. It's just in me. I don't want to be like the German in Nazi Germany, watching people go off in droves. And because you have a comfortable house, because you got a Mercedes Benz and you're eating every day, it don't matter. Oh, just go on. When I was very little, I couldn't take it. My mother used to tell me about slavery. And for a long time, I thought I had a slave history. I used to think I came from slavery until I realized that all of America is an immigrant country. We are constantly being refreshed with new people, constantly. Slavery, I put it this way. The only way slavery could have existed in this country for so long, over 300 years, is because people went along with it. The law cannot work unless the citizens go along with it, good or bad. If the citizens stop adhering to their own good laws, they're unprotected. If the citizens stomp out or stop aligning themselves with bad laws, the laws go away. Liberty is not granted. It's taken. Freedom. It can never be given to you. It's in here. Even if somebody got you in chains, got you picking cotton, in your heart and your mind, if you know you free, you looking for a way out. Even as you pick it, you call me whatever you like, I know I'm free. You can't give me freedom. Now, the government can give you liberty, because liberty is about walking about a society freely.
Liberty's when you're off a ship, like Peggy.
Whoa. Can we shout out Jordan Maxwell real quick?
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
We need to become free people again, not freed people. I'll say it again. We need to be free people, not freed people. Just because we have an emancipation procrastination does not mean that we are actually free. What makes you free is your declaration within that you are free. If somebody else can give you freedom, they can also take it away. When a lot of people were not free in the United States, Harriet Tubman was free. Frederick Douglass was free. Nat Turner was free. So the point of the matter is this: are you free or have you been freed? Power looks for weakness. Power looks for weakness. If you stand in firm and you say, I know the law, not just this law of the land or sea, but I know the law. I know that justice, I know that nature is just. And if you're unnatural, out of nature, imbalanced yourself, the real war is not me against you, it's endurance. I'm going to out-endure you. Ugh. The evil people trip themselves up trying to chase the righteous. It's when the righteous come out of their square and into their world and try to fight. Say no, just resist. Matter of fact, don't even recognize their authority. When you recognize their authority, they got you. They've been doing it to us for ages. You say whatever you like about black people being overrepresented in prison. You know I ain't with that at all. But the truth is, my own people are lost. I said the other day, Dr. Martin Luther King Boulevard. I just came here, there's a Dr. Martin Luther King Boulevard. In Harlem, there's a doc, well, every city has a Dr. King Boulevard. If you go to the edges of those cities or even along the whole of the boulevard, what are black people doing on Dr. Martin Luther King Boulevard?
They don't sell them.
We're selling drugs illegal. We're killing ourselves on Dr. King Boulevard. Well, there's a movie called Black Panther, the Black Panther movie, where it has become American entertainment to show how the government put heroin in the black community to offset revolutionary organizations. This is American entertainment. Like, you could go to the movies, sit down, and be entertained by this. I find it amazing. History repeats itself. And every time it does, it goes up a little bit. We are back again. We're the abolitionists. Again, and this right here, this gathering right here is the true state of America, the true state of American history. We Africans in America, we were trying to get free. We couldn't get free on our own because our own people were betraying us. It was strong white American families that ran the Underground Railroad that would leave a lantern in the window and we would run up, knock two or three times and be let in. A lot of families were hung because of that, shot because of that. Yeah, we talk about Harriet Tubman, but the families, the white American families that risked their lives taking her in, that's the part of American history we need to hear again. Our main message, stop the violence. They want us to be violent. They want us to be enraged, angered. Peace is a revolutionary strategy. If you could just hold your peace, this is the center of endurance. And endurance is what wins wars. Not how many people you kill, but how long can you endure? George Washington lost almost every battle he had, but he endured. He out-endured the British. And that's how the battle was won. Endurance. So I'm saying, stop the violence. Stop the violence in your home. Stop the violence in yourself, meaning doubting yourself, hating yourself. Stop the violence in society. Police officers, I beg you, stop the violence.
I interrupted you earlier when you tried to tell a Bard story. You started the Bard story and I interrupted.
The Bard story.
I
was going to say that violence in society is not caused by the people. It's caused by the neglect of leadership. And the police are the number one cause of violence in society. They make the people jittery. They make the people insecure. Plus, if you look up what a police officer is in the Black's Law Dictionary, the only thing the police are supposed to be doing is keeping the peace. And they do not. So whose fault is it when you have violence in society? If you're paying taxes to have peace in society and moral justice, the police are supposed to be the epitome of morality. Our children are supposed to look at a police officer and see an example of what a citizen is. Now they fear them. So if our children don't even respect the police, how are they going to respect the law?
All right. That was KRS-One here, interviewed by Alex Jones recently right here in Austin, right near Martin Luther King Boulevard. That guy knows some stuff. You know that? That guy, he understands the big picture. Hey, listen, we're just about out of time on the Alex Jones Show. This is Bob Dacey, substituting for Alex Jones. If you want to go to my website, it's simpletruthonline.net, simpletruthonline.net. That's where they archive our local TV show here in Austin, The Simple Truth, produced by Jeff Kentoff and Kelly Taylor. So I'm sure Alex will be back Monday, full of vim and vigor. And until then, this is Bob Dacey for Alex Jones. Take care and have a good weekend.